And ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
Welcome and good evening to the Hagman & Hagman Report. This Thursday, May 23rd, 2013, I'm your host, co-host Joe Hagman, along with my father and co-host Doug Hagman, who will be on with us shortly. For those of you who are in live chat, I don't know if you guys hear a very high kind of white noise, but I hear it, and we will get that fixed if you do, and there it goes. Okay, and just to let you know, we were having a little trouble connecting before the show. Skype and BTR do not want to be working together today for some reason, so we're having trouble, but my dad will be on here shortly. A couple of announcements we're going to get into while we're waiting. Excuse me. Tomorrow night, we were going to have a special show. And that special show, we will be joined with V again this Friday, as there has been big news out of Japan, not only out of the Japanese financial markets, but the United States financial markets. Today, Japanese stocks suffer the biggest one-day plunge since the year 2000. Stocks plunged by the most in 13 years Thursday as traders rushed to bank profits on worries that the U.S. was poised to scale back its money printing program and Chinese manufacturing data disappointed. The Nikkei 225 index closed down 7.32% or 1,143.28 points, the biggest daily point fall since April of 2000, and larger than the drop seen when the country was rocked by the Fukushima nuclear disaster in March 2011. There were no risers in Japan benchmark index, the first time every stock has retreated since April 2005. Investors banked recent profits on the bank of the Chinese data that showed manufacturing in the world's second largest economy contracted for the first time in 7 months. The wider topics index also fell 6.9%. to 1,188.34. The negative Chinese indicator triggered today's selling that, according to a Mr. Fujiki, a strategist at Okishan Securities in Japan. Now, V talked a lot about this from his first appearance on the show. He talked about how one of the indicators that we were going to need to watch for would be Japan. And not shortly after that, we saw the articles coming out about the currency wars and Japan devaluing its currency, how China, Japan, Russia, a whole bunch of countries, Venezuela, were getting involved in these currency wars. And I still have some headlines here. Currency war returns, 1930 style. Who will lose out? Venezuela announces currency deflation. China just threatened a currency war if the Fed doesn't stop printing. And then we have Obama, senior official. We are going to kill the dollar. Also, China fully prepared for currency war. And we also know that they have the BRICS deals going on. We have an upcoming Bilderberg conference on the same weekend as the conference we will be attending in Apex, North Carolina. That's something else we want to continue to push people, and hopefully that they will attend, in hopes that they will attend the free seminar in Apex, North Carolina, at the Mount Pisgah Baptist Church, June 7th through the 9th. It is the National Insecurity Seminar. Susan Price, the Gold Star mother of Aaron Kennefick, and as well as myself and my father, and a few other people will be there. We will be going through the itinerary and If you want more information, go to our website on the right-hand side. Click on the banner with our pictures. Underneath says National Security. Now,
National Insecurity.
My father, National Insecurity. Okay.
Yeah, there we go. There we go. Yeah, welcome, folks. Sorry about that. We had a little bit of technical difficulties on the way up here or on the way into the program, which it's not unusual. You know, it's amazing to me. I received an email, a couple of emails that suggested that we're getting too close to the truth, and I'm saying that only because I think it's interesting how we are having to fight to keep. To keep this program going without hitch, without any hitches. Now, last night, we didn't have too many hitches. Did we, Joe, last night? I don't think we really did.
Last night was fantastic.
Okay, that's what I thought. Now, can you hear me okay now, or are we a little muffled, folks? I'm not able.
I hear a little echo. I hear a little echo and a little muffled, but I know you're on a landline. What you can do is we can get you reconnected through the computer on Skype, and I'll do that when we're playing some of our clips now.
Oh, that's fine. But that's fine. But I just want to say this on the opening, and I heard you talk about tomorrow night. Folks, you've got to listen to tomorrow night to Steve Quayle and V. It's going to be from 9 to midnight tomorrow. He was the one that in January talked about Japan taking, you know, tanking, and, of course, it seemed like everyone piled on after that, and then every program since then, every bit of information since then that he has given has come out in the mainstream media within a week, within 10 days, within 2 days in some cases, within 5 days or a week. Now we're seeing the real thing with Japan, Joe. I'm going to tell you right now, we're seeing the real thing with Japan, and that's going to start, folks, that's going to start the economic clock ticking here in the United States. If you go to Zero Hedge, by the way, and I don't know, Joe, it kind of messes us up here with the communications, but if you go to Zero Hedge, it was up here. Yeah, Kyle Bass talks on Japan's turbo quantitative easing. It's not going to be enough. Well, of course not. And we've seen this before. The Bank of Japan has got a very, very thin layer or thin cushion here, by the way, to soak up this, what he calls irrational investor paradox selling. In other words, the biggest bank and Japan's economy is about ready to tank. And I think V's got a lot to say on this and even more precise information he'll give tomorrow night. And Joe, you mentioned too about the seminar, the National Insecurity Seminar, Apex, North Carolina. Folks, there's not too many spots left. So if you can, make your reservations as soon as possible. And that's for June 7th, 8th, and 9th, and certainly that's Friday night, Saturday, and Sunday with Susan Price, Gold Star Mother. We are going to be presenting with her. She's going to be taking the lead in talking about what happened to her son in Afghanistan. Oh, my goodness, you know, how he was executed,
yeah.
You know. Now, you know what? You know what I noticed, too? But, Joe, on this, by the way, I'm getting that delay because of the because we're getting a delay here. But anyway, but we're going to be presenting on certain aspects as well, including the New World Order, who's who, what we can do about it. This is a very, very forward-thinking pastor, and I don't mean that in the way we'll say like MSNBC means that, but a very anticipatory type pastor of this church who cares about his congregation, who cares about the flock of people that come in, who cares about the information that can, I mean, this pastor is passionate. Joe, I got to tell you, so I am so excited to be, and I'm very humbled. And I know you are, too, to be asked to be a part of this. And if you're within the Raleigh area, Raleigh, North Carolina area, if you're within a reasonable drive, love to have Love to meet you, folks. Love to meet you. I got to tell you one other thing, too. I want to welcome people listening out of Iowa. There's a small town in Iowa. They asked me not to mention the small town. I guess it's really small. Maybe it's the entire town that's listening. I want to say hello to you folks, and God bless you, and also the people out of Peoria, Illinois. I never thought I'd ever say hello to Peoria, but hello, Peoria, and, of course, new listeners out of
I know we have some in Taiwan.
Yes, as a matter of fact, we have got quite a listenership in Taiwan. One thing that we've noticed that we've suffered from is the military. The United States military has blocked our transmissions via Blog Talk. You can't get us, or you can't get our website. And that's the United States military. So, interesting. Before I turn it back over to you, Joe, because we've got a lot of news to cover, just a couple of things. Excuse me, I want to mention this. The seminar, which is really important, folks. If you go to HomelandSecurityUS.com, that's our home base, HomelandSecurityUS.com. Click on the National Insecurity link that's on the top, or that little picture thing, that the little picture on the right-hand column, and it'll take you to a page in our website that explains the entire seminar, and then from there, there's a link to the registration form. It's a simple, just name, address, you know, just so they know how many people are coming and how many bodyguards to put for Joe, I, and Susan. Just kidding.
Yeah.
But how many snipers to position on the roof in the event something goes bad? It's going to be a very informative session. The other thing I wanted to mention, and this is something I got an email today from America. Hang on a second here. Let me grab this here. AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. You know, we talk about preps, and I don't want this to be an infomercial, but the people at AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com, they have some great products and some necessary products. They're kind enough. They're very kind. They said because of last night's or the fundraiser from Tuesday, I grabbed it late. They are willing, or they have decided to extend their fundraising through this Friday, through tomorrow at midnight. What this means is this. Their goal is, and I got to tell you, God bless these people. Their goal is to raise $10,000 payable on Friday, May 30th, 2013, to Hagman and Hagman Show, okay? God bless them, okay, because the expense that we have, the expenses that we've gone through to do some things is just incredible to even keep the show running and to position ourselves to position ourselves to make some changes that we're not prepared to even talk about yet. But anyway, is this. They are going to donate 25% of their proceeds of their entire selection of stun guns to us. They retail at $39.95. Their goal is to sell 1,000 units. In addition, they're going to donate 10% of all gross proceeds of the complete line of 7-day survival kits, 72-hour survival kits, and the survival vest. You know, when I got this email, Joe, I looked at this and I thought of not what you and I can get out of this, although, my goodness, how great would that be? But if you go to AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com, and again, I'm not trying to make this an infomercial, but if you go to AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com, look at their products. Look at their products. Hey, folks, you guys, I'll tell you what, time is short. And I just wanted to make sure you folks knew this, that these people were giving away their profits to us. But the things that they have are just absolutely incredible. I'm getting hand signals here from Joe.
Yeah, you're getting hand signals here from me. What we're going to need to do is Troy's going to have to do a cold restart. So I'm going to play an audio. That means you can stay connected. he's going to restart. Cuban's going to lose sound for just a few minutes. And I'm playing audio here. This is Judge Napolitano, IRS controversy and Obama. And we're going to hope this whole sound situation is fixed on the other side.
Okay, so what do I do? Just sit here and
okay, I'm going to play this audio. You put yourself on mute.
All right.
We're going to let Troy reconnect. We'll reconnect, folks, if who can
the
hear us.
Of
let everybody else know. We'll be right back. And we're going to get this fixed. Thanks, guys, for your patience.
Again, breaking news has come in recently. Fox News has now confirmed President Obama will name a White House budget official as acting IRS commissioner. His name is Daniel Werfel. He worked in the administration for years, dealt with budget issues. He will replace the outgoing IRS boss. Now, the president didn't directly answer a question today about when people at the White House knew about this IRS controversy. Remember what the question is. In fact, this is the exact question, as read by Megan. Megan, thank you. This is the question from a Bloomberg reporter at the news conference a short time ago. Can you, Mr. President, assure the American people that nobody in the White House knew about the agency's actions before your counsel's office found out on April the 22nd? The agency, she was referring to the IRS. It was absolutely crystal clear. One more time. Can you assure the American people that nobody in the White House knew about the agency's actions before your counsel's office found out on April 22nd? Roll it.
Let me make sure that I answer a specific question. I can assure you that I certainly did not know anything about the IG report before the IG report had been leaked through press. Through the press. Typically, the IG reports are not supposed to be widely distributed or shared. They tend to be a process that everybody's trying to protect the integrity of.
He said, let me answer, make sure I answer your specific question, and then he went on to absolutely not answer the specific question. Why? Here was the question again. Can you assure the American people that nobody in this White House knew about the agency's actions before your counsel found out on April 22nd? The allegation is that the IRS was targeting conservative groups. The IRS has admitted as much, every bit of it. And the question is, did the White House know? Because the follow-up question, if the White House did know, did you direct any of it? That's the next question. So when the question was asked, can you assure the American people that nobody in the White House knew about the agency's actions before your counsel's office found out on April 22nd, he said...
Let me make sure that I answer a specific question. I can assure you that I certainly did not know anything about the IG report before the IG
That wasn't the question. Nobody said anything about the IG report. No, this wasn't about the Inspector General's report. This was a very simple question. Did anybody, not you, did anybody in the White House know that the IRS was targeting anybody, in this case conservative groups? That was the question. Then he said, let me specifically answer you the question, and then he specifically did not answer the question. Judge Napolitano is here, along with Mike Santoli as well. But, Judge, as Megan pointed out in the last hour, this isn't a court of law. But if that question were asked in a courtroom and that answer were given...
The person who asked it would ask that the answer be struck because it wasn't responsive to the question. And a judge, not just me, any judge in any courtroom would say, answer the question. This is a Clinton-esque answer. This is an effort to answer a different question, knowing there couldn't be a follow-up because this is not a courtroom and they limited the questions at this presser and hoping that this would go away.
It's not going away.
In fact, he's made it worse with this answer.
Mike, if the White House knew, we're in new territory.
If the White House knew about the activity, not just the details of the IG report.
Oh, that wasn't the question. The question was, did you know about the agency's activities?
Probably is a new territory. And I also think that this entire kind of mode of now we're figuring out, we're parsing exactly who knew what when, shows you why this thing is not going to be dispensed with the resignation of an interim IRS chief, right? So this is going to flower on from here. We have to have a full airing of exactly what happened.
Jay Carney got the same thing. Listen to what Jay Carney said. Not today, before. Listen.
That nobody at the White House and nobody on the president's political team had any knowledge or was involved in any way in the targeting of Tea Party groups by the IRS?
Yes.
Absolutely not.
I mean, we found out about this.
See, now that was the answer Tuesday from Jay Carney, but today they asked Jay Carney's boss, the president of the United States, can you assure the American people that nobody in the White House knew about the agency's actions before your counsel's office found out on April the 22nd? Roll it.
let me make sure that I answer a specific question. I can assure you that I certainly did not know anything about the IG report before the IG.
Okay, I think we've made the point now.
Yes.
If Jay Carney was right on Tuesday, and the answer is we didn't know, we need to hear that, because that's a big deal. And we need the answer from the man in charge of the nation to be responsive. That's only fair. Because if they knew, the next question is, did you direct this? The question would be, are you orchestrating a campaign against political enemies from inside the White House?
In order to undo the effects of a Supreme Court decision that you have publicly condemned and that they have availed themselves of.
No one is suggesting that that's what happened. Because if the answer from the president is no, we didn't know, there is no follow-up question. It's over. That's it. Answered, no, you didn't. We'll keep checking to make sure that's accurate. But that's the end of the questioning. And if the answer is yes, there's another question. So we need the first answer.
We need an environment in which somebody, like you just did, Shep, can follow up with questions rather than this one question and then we move on to another question in a foreign language to a foreign leader.
To me, this isn't about conservative groups being targeted. That's not what this is about. This is about the government going after a citizen wrongly.
Because of the citizen's speech, political speech, the highest protected speech we have.
That's all this is. Partisans want to make this about Republicans and Democrats and left and right. And that's not what this is. This is about the government and the people. The government can't do this. The Constitution says no. The Supreme Court ruling on Citizens United changed the country, and not in a good way. But it's the law of the land.
And he has taken an oath to uphold the law of the land, whether he agrees with it or not.
There's a way of, you know, obviously, if in fact it's an excess of care being taken by saying, who knows if anybody in the White House somewhere along the way picked up a stray thought about what was going on there.
Well,
if that's what's going on, then no big deal.
But Jay Carney was specific. Go on.
Sure. No. And if the IG report is the shorthand for, well, when all this stuff was gathered together and put in front of us in one place, that's when we knew the extent of it. On the other hand, there's a way to write this story that says you had this huge flood of one-time new wannabe tax-exempt organizations. We needed a shortcut to get at them. Nobody said that either, right? Everyone's saying the right thing. You cannot do this. You cannot target people, you know, based on keywords or anything else.
The president's a very smart guy.
Yeah.
The president parsed his words because he doesn't want to be accused of lying. Now he's being accused of hiding the truth.
We've reached out to the White House for a clarification. We eagerly await that clarification, and the moment we get it, we will report it. Stay tuned.
And there you have it. That was a 7-minute clip from Shepard Smith with Judge Napolitano talking about the IRS targeting of Tea Party and conservative and constitutional groups and the other scandals that Obama is facing that he seems to be not being held accountable for. And there's a lot
let me jump in here. First of all, how does the audio sound? Does it sound better or sound the same, sound worse?
To me, it sounds much better.
All right. Just want to say this, when you said scandals, what we're talking about, folks, is not scandals. These are not scandals at all. These are crimes. This is criminal activity under this Obama regime. And you know, some of this might not be new, but it certainly is new to the extent, well, new at least in its in the manner in which it's being conducted, and also the highly charged atmosphere in which it's being conducted. But these are crimes. These aren't scandals. But finish your thought now that I've taken you completely off track here.
No, it seems to be a talking point between former Obama aides to news correspondent talking heads that the government is so big now. Obama is not responsible because he can't know everything that's going on with such a big government.
So we have a train, meaning the government, a choo-choo train, if you will, on the track, speeding full speed ahead, or better yet, we've got a White Star Line ship called the Titanic. We're all on board. It's steaming
full speed ahead in the dark of night toward an iceberg, and no one is commanding, no one is captaining the ship. Is that what you're telling me?
Oh, yeah, they're David Axelrod, for one. He is saying that Mr. Obama's lack of responsibility is due to, it's part of being the president. There's so much beneath you, you can't know because the government is so vast.
Yet, so, okay, so let me get this straight. They're complaining that the government's too big, but yet they want to make it bigger. And
right.
They are making it bigger.
Right, and that's some talking heads' perspective. Now we have people like Howard Dean, and I really want to be careful when I say this, and I'm looking for the article so I don't misquote this. Howard Dean, after the show last night, I posted this because I found this to be rather sickening, said the Benghazi scandal was a joke.
Yeah, I saw that. And I don't think anything's funny about four dead Americans.
No, and that's what I wrote on the Facebook post. And I did post that on Facebook. And I said, you know, I don't think the parents or family of the dead U.S. soldiers would think that was funny. And, yeah, Howard Dean, Benghazi is a laughable joke. Former Democratic National Committee Chairman Howard Dean considers the controversy over Benghazi a joke and is silly. Benghazi is a laughable joke, Dean proclaimed twice last week in a discussion with a Republican national insider or national, I'm not sure, I'm not opening the article here, but that is showing you some of the sentiment coming out of the left. We have two parts, and whether they're Democrats or Republicans, we have two trains of thought with these scandals. One train of thought is it is the evil Obama opposition trying to drum up controversy and scandals in order to because they don't like them. And then you have the other train of thought, even Democrats and Republicans, saying, yes, this is serious. But on the IRS issue, you have both sides of the aisle saying this is serious, while you have both sides of the aisle on the other side saying it's not serious.
Folks,
it's all political theater.
Okay.
But Obama needs to be impeached. And as you were talking earlier, there could be and there is evidence for what is called RICO.
RICO statute. And and here's the thing. First of all, first and foremost, who's politicizing, if anyone, these crimes? It is both parties, but primarily the progressive side of things, which commonly we'll say the Democratic side, but progressives are politicizing these scandals. And how are these crimes? And how are they doing this? Because they withheld evidence until after the election. You folks get this. They knew, for example, about the IRS before the 2012 election. They knew about the...
This is big. Because you're right, the IRS scandal. It came out, they knew about it well before the election. Benghazi,
right.
Before the election.
And the
periods, before the election.
Right.
Now, you see the firestorm now.
Right. But see, I see where you're going with this. Now, had anyone brought these reports up, for example, the ARB report that was issued by Thomas Pickering, and folks, you've got to understand Thomas Pickering is an apologist for Iran. He is one of the most insider of insiders, but he authored the ARB report that was referenced by Hillary Clinton during her testimony. But the fact of the matter is this, all of these reports, all of these findings, all of these issues were withheld by Republicans and Democrats alike. To avoid appearing political before the 2012 elections. Now that the 2012 elections are over, now these quote scandals or crimes are coming out. But I'll tell you what, you're not hearing the worst parts of them. The IRS crime is much bigger. It involves many more people. So what you said earlier, we'll just take this IRS crime right now, Joe. I was talking to the gentleman who provides me with information on the inside, my intelligence insider, and he said, look, you're not going to stop this by a special prosecutor. It's just not going to happen. We're not going to have the time. This country is out of time. We are out of time. So we cannot afford to put in a special prosecutor and they go through the motions and they hear testimony and take this, and then it'll go to the next election cycle, basically the 2014 elections, midterms, and people will be screaming about the politics of that. So we've got to go right for the most efficient way. And if we can't have a straight up and down impeachment vote on just what we see, because I think all of the questions are pretty much answered, or no, I shouldn't say all the questions are answered. Haven't we seen enough? Haven't we seen enough, whether you want to classify this as incompetence or intentional taking down of this country? Haven't we seen enough of both or either one? Short of that, then let's invoke the investigations and actions under the RICO statutes. And I'm talking to Marika Peshman, the author of The Whistleblower, today, and we're going to be doing some research and also some reports on that as well.
Back to the financial news. Then we're going to come back to this, because there was a question to us, what would we do if we were in charge? And I do want to answer that, so we'll get back to that. But as the world shakes off the 7.3% plunge of the Japanese stock market, the U.S. stock market took a hit of its own. U.S. Let me switch headlines on me. World shakes off U.S. Nikkei's 7.3 plunge. Did I say that right? The Nikkei?
No.
The Nikkei.
No.
All right, no. Forget it.
That's
anyway. Muted stock declines in Europe and the U.S. show that investors around the globe are now inclined to agree with Mr. Romari. Mr. Romari said the Japanese stocks in recent months had been faster than expected. Weak Chinese manufacturing data had promoted sellers to take profits all at the same time. And he goes on to say, wagering that Thursday's sell-off in Japan is an isolated case of market blues rather than a cause for a broader concern. Now, we know this from V, who has been on many times, and as we said at the beginning of the show, for those who missed it, he will be joining us tomorrow, that he said, watch for Japan. Japan is the indicator. It will be the beginning of the currency wars. And as soon as he came on January 11th, I think it was, not even 4 days after that, we started seeing articles about the currency wars. Now, it goes on to say, even some bulls warn that uneven economic data, the sharp rise in the U.S. and Japanese stocks, and increasing interest by short-term investors, including hedge funds, could pave the way for more volatile trading. Japanese stocks were up more than 60% since late November, when Shinzo Abe, now Japan's prime minister, hinted that his administration would sharply increase the money supply, a.k.a. QE Japan, or print as much money as you want.
The Nikkei Index,
okay. In a bid to start resputtering the economy. The actual bond buying program didn't start until last month, however, and skeptics stress it is too early to declare victory. The pullback on the index on Thursday started with modest declines that picked up steam after Tokyo's lunch breaks, with stocks finishing the day at the session low. And once again, this is the biggest one-day loss in Japan's market history in more than 13 years. Another outside factor in recent rally has been the heavy participation of hedge funds and other institutional investors in the U.S. and Europe who have made betting on the Japanese stock market one of the most popular investments this year. And why do they do that? They are betting against it. They are betting on the fact that the Japanese markets will go down, putting what are called put options on certain stocks. But we're going to have V on tomorrow. He is really going to explain and get into this and tell us what this means now that we're actually seeing this come out in the light of day, now that their stock market is dropping and we are seeing the effects, and we are going to continue to see the effects.
I had seen a quote from Tyler Durden, again from Zero Hedge. I've been going there quite a bit, because they've taken a lot of our information and repackaged it I'm not saying that they don't have any of their own. They most certainly do. They're a fantastic website. I like their website, but they've used some of, for example, some of what V has said and others, and what we've said too with respect to what's going on. But Tyler Durden had posted a quote of a quote. I guess you would say it. It's called Terminal State of Broken. And just listen to this. It's two sentences here. And doesn't this sum it up? The world has taken on a, quote, virtual reality, end quote, with no reference to what really is. This is the biggest market power play of smoke and mirrors in history. I'm sorry, it's three sentences. It is happening because the financial system is in a terminal state of broken. Now, doesn't that summarize pretty much of how things are as markets continue to confound? And can any of us make sense of why the market is up and the metals are down and unemployment is up, but it's not really up, it's down, and we're in a recovery, but we're really not in a recovery because the numbers show we're in a recovery, but it depends on which numbers you look at. And of course, you know, it's just up is down, wrong
down
is right,
yeah.
And it's just totally upside down. But certainly we are, that quote, by the way, it's my understanding, is from Jim Sinclair. So.
And I have more on this later, but this all goes towards something I wanted to speak about. We always talk about the enemy's strategy, the enemy's plans, and this is part of the enemy's strategy. This is part of Satan and the evil, satanic element in the world that is trying to do more than just bring chaos here. They're trying to kill the spirit of people who believe in the Lord, trying to neutralize them through confusion, through mistrust, uncertainty, doubt, all of this stuff we are seeing in the news, all these stories of just that, untrust, mistrust, doubt, lies, lies by omission, distractions, distracting questions. Nobody's focusing on the real issues here. Nobody's going to the heart of the matter, which is this nation is definitely under judgment, as it has removed God as the cornerstone for everything and replaced what they had, where they had God, with sins, with
right.
Things that should not be, like the Boy Scouts. I don't know if you guys saw this today.
Well, wait, before you get into that, I would say this in another way. I realize what you just said and totally agree with it, but wouldn't you also agree that immorality, what's the common denominator in all of this that we're seeing take place? What we're seeing is government is the common denominator. It's
power.
Government intervention. Right. Power, greed, lust. And at the core of all this is immorality, specifically immorality within the government, whether that immorality is in the form of greed or graft or corruption or whatever it might be. Isn't that what's at the core of all this? And that weakens our moral and social fabric as a society. It's when the government is dysfunctional because of immorality, then I think. But see, no one wants to talk about this. The evening news, they don't talk about this. They don't talk about the root, the core of the issues. And you're right. It's really a war against good, all that is good, and it's a war against God's people, in my view, anyway.
Yeah, and before we hit the Boy Scout story, this kind of caught me off guard today, and I know you have additional information on this. Back to the FBI and the Boston bombing suspect, Tarznev. Two FBI agents involved in the Tarznev arrest have been killed during a training exercise. According to a statement from the FBI, two FBI special agents were killed last Friday during a training exercise off the coast of Virginia Beach, Virginia. Special Agent Christopher Lorek and Special Agent Stephen Shaw were members of the FBI's elite hostage rescue team, part of the critical incident response group based in Quantico, Virginia.
The cause of the incident is under review, the FBI said. Prison Planet, I think they're missing a T there, reports that last month the team was involved with the arrest of Sarnev, a suspect in the Boston Marathon bombings. Yesterday, it was reported a man who knew the two suspects was shot dead by an FBI agent Tuesday night in Orlando. People surrounding the brothers are dying at a faster rate than those who are somehow connected to the JFK assassination. This from the Economic Policy Journal.
Yeah, this whole situation smells to high heaven. I spoke to a source of mine, in fact, well, I'm not even going to even make reference to who this source is, spent a long time in Orlando, in that Orlando area, knows a lot of the agents, knows a lot of the people, knows a lot of things. I'm just going to end that there. You'll have to trust me on this, but he contacted me today and said, look, there's a problem with this. There's a problem with this whole story, and especially the FBI agents. There's a problem with the killing of that suspect, and there's a problem with the slaying of the, or the mysterious deaths, if you will, my words now, of the FBI agents.
Now, we're going to play this clip of audio, and we're going to get to this story on the other side. There is rioting in Sweden, and not only that, there is violence taking place in the UK. And here is this clip from RT. Sweden burning, Stockholm riots, and violence enter fourth day.
Smashed windows, cars on fire. One of Europe's most peaceful capitals, Stockholm, now witnessing its worst outbreak of violence in years. Hundreds of youths, mostly immigrants, have ripped through the city's suburbs in four nights of unrest. The violence has shocked the country, famous for its attractive immigration policies and very generous welfare system. RT's Peter Oliver reports from Stockholm.
We've seen a fourth night of violence here in Stockholm. Wednesday had been relatively quiet. We'd seen community leaders out on the streets trying to stop young people from rioting, from setting fire to cars and other things. As you can see from what's going on just behind me, once they've gone in for the evening, it seems that the cars have gone up. The people have started setting more fires. We've seen stones thrown at the police, at journalists as well. And this is all continuing from what we've seen start on Sunday here in Stockholm. Now, it's being claimed that this was all started following a police shooting of a 69-year-old man. He was killed by police officers in his apartment, apparently holding a machete while he was slain by police. That started the first night of violence, and that's continued throughout the week here in Stockholm. Now, talking to community leaders, they say that one of the reasons for this has been down to unemployment here in these particular areas. I'm in the suburb of Husby, which is not too far from the centre of Stockholm. It's been one of the worst hit areas by violence in recent nights. They're saying that although Sweden's unemployment figures are actually below the EU average, when you look at youth unemployment, we're talking about the under 25s, nearly a quarter of the Swedish population are out of work. And if you look at the people who have been taking part in the violence that we've seen, they are all very, very young people indeed. That's one of the reasons why earlier on Wednesday evening, it seemed like things were under control when we saw parents and religious leaders out on the streets. It seems, though, that once they've gone to bed, then the trouble has started again as violence continues to rack the Swedish city.
All right. We have violence in Stockholm. The Husby, northern suburb of Sweden's capital, where rioting sparked a week of violence across the city, is nursing a deep grievance against the police. On Sunday, when the clashes began, two friends, Wadi, 24, and Andreas, 19, set out to confront their tormentors. We grew up here together. We all live here together. But the police spoiled it. Wadi, a Swede whose parents were from Iraq, they mess with us every day. The police know all the young men well, he said, and harass them constantly, demanding his license when he is driving home from his job. And he adds that it is much worse for them and their friends than what they say. They say, I have betrayed my country by having black friends, says Andreas, a student. They stop me all the time, but last Sunday we chased them, and they were scared. This all has to do with new immigration policies that are going on in Sweden and multiculturalism that is, I guess we would say, plaguing that nation, as they're not taking it too well.
Yeah, exactly. And but combine that with the now again, this is day four of the riots in Sweden, and here's the reason that we're focusing on this is because if you look at what's going on in this area in Sweden here, the Sweden's capital, it's coming to the United States. This is why we want to really make sure you understand. If you want to know what the future has in store for this country, take a look at what's going on here. You're going to hear stories where, as you said earlier, the tensions had been brewing since, what, last middle May 13th, thereabouts, when the police shot a 69-year-old guy who had a machete. But throw into that mix reports of racial slurs being made from both the police and the rioters. But the underlying aspect of this is the poverty, the high crime rate as a result of the economic factors, the poverty, the low income part of the capital here of Sweden. But it comes down to that. And you've got, once again, the immorality part. In addition to everything else, you've got a lot of graft within Sweden's, within the authorities. You've got, it's, in that respect, it's almost as if you're looking at
America.
I was going to say during Hurricane Katrina, there's a St. Louis, or a,
yeah, you have huge groups of people that don't like each other for no reason other than skin color or cultural differences. Then you have a whole groups of people that don't like the authorities who, where here in America, you know, we see so much of the bad side of the authorities, so many of the police beatings, the shootings that should not have happened, when there are still good policemen here, but yet there are bad ones. Now we're going to shift to London.
This is connected too, though. If you and see, people don't really. I mean, this
is connected because this is the same type of situation where we have people from different cultural backgrounds, and in this case, it was apparently a Muslim convert known to MI5, a Woolrich terrorist suspect, beheaded a soldier in broad daylight in the streets in London.
Right.
Okay, a man seen ranting at a video camera moments after a soldier was beheaded in the street was a Muslim convert known as Michael Adbedaljo, who was known to MI5.
He was going to say, if you could pronounce that name, good Lord. Go on.
It goes on to say that they're looking into probes of extremism in recent years, and he was also known to hate preachers. With these two preachers, Corderay and Barkey. Tonight, the soldier was named as drummer Lee Rigby, 25, from the 2nd Battalion of the Royal Regiment of Fusiliers. Meanwhile, a man and woman, both 29, were arrested on suspicion of conspiracy to murder in relation to the terror attack. So we have people, and I don't know if you guys and our listeners have seen the Muslim patrol videos that have been coming out of the UK. I know you have watched them, Dad. We've watched them together.
Yes. But here's okay. With respect to this, first of all, this was purely religiously. This was a Islamic crime. I don't want to say religious. This was an Islamic crime. You have to look no further than Islam to find the motive for this crime in London. But here's the real kicker in my view. This Obama regime refuses to label the London murder as Islamic terrorism. Can you believe that? In fact,
well, yeah, I can. When we have the Fort Hood shooter here gaining $300,000 in pay in his 5 years waiting for trial as his terrorist attack was declared a workplace violence incident.
Right.
Now, the people who are where the victims who are still alive cannot get the pay they deserve while he is making his salary, because it is innocent until proven guilty in this country. But apparently they can twist things in ways that, you know, help the victim or help the perpetrators and hurt the victims when it serves their political agenda. And we see this is, and this goes back to what I'm talking about, how the enemy will throw in these things to neutralize us, to divide us. They will divide us along any lines that they can, whether it's racial, whether it's class, whether it's ideology.
There has to be that division here, though. In this case, though, I understand, and I know I interrupted you, but I understand this. But look, we have to stand away from Islam. We cannot accept Islam as a genuine, legitimate religion in this country. We can accept it as a political system in this country that has a religious component to it, but we cannot allow ourselves to be migrated into the system, into this.
The end goal of the enemy is to turn each one of us against ourselves.
But this is not what we're doing here. We're taking a political system, a culture, a cult known as Islam. And this is by their definition, folks. This is not by mine. This is by their definition.
But
so
you do,
I'm not being racist here.
You do agree that the vast majority of Muslims are nonviolent, though?
I will say that the vast majority of Muslims have yet to become violent.
Okay. Now, I say this for an important reason. I don't see Islam as a big violent movement. It'd be like taking Christians, putting, I don't know, we'll just say the school shooters. They say they labeled them as, you know, very pro-Jesus. And the way that they labeled it was in such a way through each shooting that, you know, the sentiment towards Christianity got worse and worse and worse. Now, with the actions of those few people who carried out those acts, say they were Christians, speak for the actions of the rest of them.
No, I understand what you're saying, but let me just verify, let me just clear this up. You have Islam as a really a political structure. It's that over the religious part of it. You've got the government of the United States classifying Islam as a religion, as do all Muslims. They classify it as a religion, but when it in fact it's a political and cultural, it's a way of life, because just as Christianity is, except when you look at the Quran, for example. The Quran specifically states, it calls for jihad, and jihad, by the way, is not an intellectual struggle. It's not a way to make yourself better. Jihad, by definition, is in fact a call to convert all non-believers to Islam, or kill them, or tax them or kill them, I should say. And there's two sides. There's I don't want to go straight too far down that road, but the fact of the matter is, this cult, Joe, of Islam, this culture or cult of Islam, is allows the government of the United States to use Islam, to use the various people within Islam as people who will take part in bombings. They'll take part in take part in violence. They're a tool of certain criminal elements within government, because their system is conforming, or it conforms to that level of tactic, or
right.
It conforms to that tactic.
I see what you're saying, and we don't have to conform. We should not conform. The Lord, this is from this direct quote, and this is set up real nice, actually, from T. Austin Sparks. The Lord demands a united people. The Lord can never stand with and fight for a divided people. It is the work of the enemy to divide. It is the Lord's strategy to bring about a complete oneness, a unity. His power lies in that direction, and victory lies in that direction, that we are all together We are as one man of one heart and one mind of one will. It is essential. The Lord has spoken so much about this in the Word. To have a people who are of one heart, it is the absolute necessity to victory over the enemy. And there are Proverbs 29, verse 18, and other verses that talk about this. But this is getting to the heart of the matter, as you said, the spiritual, the moral problems that we are having, we are facing. These have been brought upon us because we have conformed, as now the Boy Scouts are conforming.
Right, and before we get into that, just think about this, though, okay? You've got Islam that has the specific tenets of their faith, the jihad, the struggle, the submission or killing. You know, it's you either submit or die. You submit or you pay a tax, and if none, ultimately you die. Compare that. Now that is the mainstream Islam. Okay, I've got to tell you, if you follow the Quran, if you study the Quran the way it's set up, and it's set up chronologically, it's not set up like the Bible is. But if you follow the Quran and you follow Muhammad's teachings from going to Mecca to Medina, he becomes more warrior-like, and so does the belief system. Now, is that all Muslims? Are they all engaged in that activity? No, not here in America. But a lot of that is due to demographics. Now, compare that to Christianity, just for a moment. The Westboro Baptist Church, Fred Phelps, proclaims to be a Christian. He goes off, he protests the soldiers' funerals, he does all sorts of despicable, absolutely despicable things in the name of Christianity. But what do mainstream Christians do differently than Fred Phelps? They don't have the same belief system as Fred Phelps, as the Westboro Baptist Church. They condemn his actions. They don't do what he does. They condemn his actions. The flip side of that, Islam, they don't condemn. When is the last time you heard the Council on American Islamic Relations vociferously condemn any act of jihad? You haven't. You've heard them play with their wordings and semantics. But my point is this. What better system of religion / politics than Islam would there be to further the American or the New World Order agenda than Islam? I could say the same for that Westboro Baptist sect with Fred Phelps. They're ripe for being a tool of the New World Order, just as the entirety, that little segment of Christianity, which I wouldn't even call it Christianity, that little segment there is ripe for advancing the New World Order, just as the entirety of Islam is ripe for advancing the government New World Order. Do you follow my thinking on this? It's what advances the objective. What can be used to advance the objective here?
Correct.
Did I make sense in that?
Yes, you did. Okay. And maybe after we have Stan Dale on this next hour, we'll get back into our discussion and take your phone calls on the matter in the third hour. But we're going to go to break. When we come back, we're going to have the author of Cosmic Conspiracy, a well-known physicist and speaker, a frequent guest of the Hagen and Hagen Report, a Mr. Stan Dale. We have many questions that we are going to ask him about what is happening with the Earth, why are things changing the way they are, what can we expect to see in the future, and how he sees things playing out in the next 30 to 60 days with the way we're seeing the sinkholes increase, the way we're seeing the solar flares increase, et cetera, et cetera. Folks, you're listening.
I'm sorry, they're one of the most intelligent guys I know. I want to throw that in there.
Yes, he is.
You're listening to the Hagman & Hagman Report this Thursday, May 23rd, 2013. We'll be right back with our special guest, Stan Dale. Stay with us.
Hi folks, Doug Hagman here. You might know me as the co-host from the Hagman & Hagman Report, or as a frequent guest on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. If you're like me, you're tired and confused over today's headlines. You just don't know where to turn for accurate, concise information about really what's going on, what's truly going on in today's society. If you don't know where to turn for accurate, well-researched, and properly vetted news, I've got a suggestion. In fact, it's a requirement. Bookmark Canada Free Press. That's CanadaFreePress.com on the internet. It's just not for Canada. It's for news across the world. Judy McLeod, founding editor, has put together a vast array of talented writers like Kelly O'Connell, Daniel Greenfield, Dr. Ilana Johnson-Powell. A lot of guest columnists, very talented writers. Folks, that's Canada Free Press at CanadaFreePress.com. Now mobile friendly. Follow on Facebook. Because without America, there is no free world.
If you love pineapple as much as I do, I've got some great news for you. You're going to love this offer from Freeze Dry Guy. For the month of May, Freeze Dry Guy is offering the finest quality freeze-dried pineapple. A case of six number 10 cans yielding 114 servings at a special introductory price. First quality freeze-dried pineapple grown and packed with nothing added. This healthy treat works wonders with salad. It's great for snacking, hiking, hunting, camping, and for adding to your food storage program. And please note that Freeze Dry Guy's foods will store on your shelf for decades. Order now and get free shipping to your front door within the lower 48 states. This special introductory price is good until May 31st. For more information and a free complete product list, go to freezedryguy.com or phone 866-404-3663. freezedryguy.com, 866-404-3663.
Hi folks, Doug Hagman here for AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. That's AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. Folks, we talk about preparations every single day. We are on the air. Time is short, ladies and gentlemen. Please understand how short it is, regardless of where you're listening to this broadcast. You could be in Taiwan or South or Central America or in North America. Time is indeed short. The economy is not going to last. We've got World War III pending in the Middle East. This least misstep, it's going to happen. Our friends at AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com have graciously, they're actually having a fundraising project for us. It's a promotion for us. Between now and midnight Friday, that's midnight tomorrow night, their goal, their stated goal is to raise $10,000 for us to keep us on the air, to make improvements that were sorely needed, to do so many things. Their passion, however, their determination is to simply help fellow Christians prepare for what we all feel are challenging times to come. I know that. That's their passion. They care. Our show, they feel, is, and our persistent efforts, they feel, are waking up a lot of people, and that we're making a difference in the Christian community. They want to help. So what they're doing to help us stay on the air is they're going to graciously donate 25% of their proceeds of their entire selection of stun guns. Now, folks, if you don't have a stun gun for your wife, please get one. Please get one. Or yourself, please get one while you still can. You need that. It's one of the best investments. I've got to tell you, I gave one to my daughter, and I feel so much better by her having it. And she knows how to use it, and she uses it when she goes to and from work. But they've got 1,000 units. Their goal is to sell 1,000 units of stun guns. In addition, they're going to donate 10% of their gross proceeds of their complete line of 7-day survival kits, 72-hour survival kits, and survival vests. It's just a tremendous look. AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com, I cannot say enough good about those people. Their goal is to make you safer, make you better prepared. And I just want to let you know that
they're doing a great job of it, with or without us. But I want to thank them. That's AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com, AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. And by the way, don't forget about our friends, GrandlandFirearms.com. That's GrandlandFirearms.com for all of your firearms needs, hunting supplies, survival supplies. They've got them too. British Columbia, beautiful place up there. And just want to let you know that they are in fact ready to take your order, ready to talk to you. Just visit their website. Go to HomelandSecurityUS.com, click on the link, and then you can peruse their website, sign their guest book, tell them Doug and Joe sent you.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the Hagman and Hagman Report this Thursday, May 23rd, 2013. We are joined with Stan Dale, standale.com, and I see his beautiful face, as you can find the video on thehagmanandhagmanreport.com, and that's all spelled out in one word. Stan, your sound is terrific. How do we sound?
Good, good. Levels are great.
Excellent. Well, it's been months since you've been on, and I'm glad that you are here tonight. We have a bunch of things we would like to ask you.
Well, I'll do my best to answer them.
Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, the author of The Cosmic Conspiracy, one of the best books you can get out there, especially if you want to learn about everything from earth changes to Bible prophecy to how everything has come to fruition throughout the last 100, 200 years and beyond that.
And Joe, don't forget, and I got to tell you, Dare to Prepare by Holly Dale, his beautiful wife. I've got to tell you, what a fantastic book. Folks, if you don't have Dare to Prepare in your library, grab that. Go to standeo.com. That's standeo.com. Get yourself both Cosmic Conspiracy and Dare to Prepare, please. Dare to Prepare is... my wife, when she first saw that book, she looked at it and she said, "My goodness, did one person write that book?" And I said, "Yeah." And I showed her the picture, the author picture, Holly Dale. And she's like, "Oh my gosh, whatever, you know." And so anyway, without any further ado, welcome, Stan.
Thank you. Good to be here, guys. How are you, Doug?
You know what? We had little audio problems that kind of knocked us off our game initially at the opening of the program, but we're doing well. Thank you very much.
Stan, let's get right into it.
All right.
You are the Hagman and Hagman Reports, I would say. You are our physicist, our scientist. We come to you when we see things going on in the earth, and there have been so many things going on since even the last time we've talked. And we're going to kind of talk about the same issues, but we've seen such an increase in these issues that we really can't go anywhere else. I'm going to start with solar flares increasing. And we know we're in a solar maximum in 2013, and we should expect to see solar flares. Last 5 days ago, we saw 4 X-class solar flares in about 48 hours, I think it was.
Yep, yep.
Should we be looking for these things to increase? Are they going to, would you expect to see days like this where there were, or 40 periods of 48 hours where we have 4 X-class flares?
Well, I was going to ask him if he was causing these from his laboratory in this.
You know, it's funny you should ask that, Doug, because I remember back years ago when the number 3 son was about 6 or 7 years old, I guess. I was up in the garage working on a Tesla car I was building for the SciTech Center. And I rolled it outside the garage and turned it on in the afternoon. It was a thunderstorm was overhead and down in the city of Perth in Australia. And you could see it from where I was standing. So he's sitting there watching me, you know, rev up this Tesla coil machine, which makes a lot of noise as it winds up. And then arcs start to come off. And I said, Now, what do you think of that? No, he was impressed. He said, wow, you know, Dad, you know, that's like lightning. And out of the corner of my eye, I saw a lightning bolt striking over Perth, just, you know, probably 10 or 15 miles away. I said, well, watch this. And I turned it off, and I turned it on. I said, now, I'm going to throw some of them over there to Perth. And I went like that and put my hand out. And sure enough, lightning flashed over the city, and he went running in to tell everybody, Dad made it lightning over Perth, you know. So, but I didn't do the flares on the sun. I'm sorry. I didn't do that.
Now, that's the story you're sticking to it, right? So, yeah, okay.
It is. There has to be a reason that NASA has called this the grand solar maximum. There's never been a grand solar maximum before. And when you look at the number of sunspots, which is normally how we determine when we're in a high solar peak, you know, we have more sunspots at the peak of the solar cycle of 11 years. Well, why are they doing that? I don't know, because all the times before when we had, you know, massive peaks, they didn't call it grand solar maximum. Now we're starting to see some grand things happening, and they're not explaining it, but I think what we're seeing here is the sun is undergoing a phase state change, like it's changing its nuclear chemistry. You know, nuclear physics, there are certain things that react together and produce other particles and, you know, make fission or fusion, and all kinds of radiation comes off of that. Well, right now, what we're seeing is an increase in CMEs and flares, which, although we can't prove the connection in the scientific community, we do know that most flares have a CME associated with it, coronal mass ejection following it. Now, once you have a big CME like we saw, in fact, two or three of them the other day that Joe was talking about, right after that, you'll see a bounce effect on the other side of the sun, and a CME or flare will shoot off of that. It rings like a bell inside there. I think we're going to see a lot more solar flares in this solar cycle peak, and I think we may have two peaks, one occurring now, and it'll back off a bit between now and the end of the year and into 2014, and peak again between 14 and 15. Now, I'm not just, you know, guessing at this. The solar physicists have been observing this, have said that they think the same thing will happen because we didn't reach the peak that we thought we would, which the equations predict. And you can, by the way, predict solar maximums and stuff by variations in the Earth's magnetic field itself, which is intimately connected to the solar wind and hence the magnetic field of the sun. The situation on the sun is very similar to something I think is happening to the Earth itself, which I can talk about in a minute. But the sun is like all gravitational bodies, whether it be a galaxy or another star system, a planet, an atom. They spin, and because they spin in the fluid of space, space is not totally empty. It is a fluid of very fine particles, so fine that we can't measure them with our bulky equipment and stuff that we try to do it with. But it's called the Dirac Sea or the ether space. A number of names have been given to it over the years. But this fluid spins and creates compression in the center of the spin, which forms, you know, a ball shape. And when that fluid starts to slow down, as it does, things age and they slow down and throw off energy. Our sun is doing that. Now, probably 25 years ago, the Russians said that they had calculated that half of the hydrogen fuel that runs the sun at the moment was burned up, and that we were looking that it could change the nuclear chemistry to a helium reaction instead of a hydrogen one. Well, what happens in between that change or during the change? Nobody knows. They still don't. But we do think that what's going to happen is the surface of the sun is going to, at some point, get a lot of coronal holes and sunspots, in essence, all over the surface of it. And it will appear to cool, but it'll be emitting great amounts of energy through these holes. At the same time, within weeks or months of this, we think that it will start boiling off debris off of the sun in a solar wind that forms a cloud around the sun. And that will occlude or hide the sun's light to a degree. It'll soften it like going through a big dust cloud. And I think all this is going to be happening in the next, you know, two or three years, maybe 7 or 8 years at the most. But it will be happening as the sun changes its state.
That's very interesting. And you talked about the potential dust-like covering over the sun kind of hindering some of its light. Would you be able to guess about what percentage of sunlight would get through
or how big of an effect this would have? Would it, we even notice it on Earth, one?
Oh, yeah.
Or would
oh,
it
yeah.
be, and then the duration of it, would this be something that could kill crops or change the jet stream, change the Earth system?
It will affect Earth and all the planets in our systems one way or another. The cloud, I think, will be a very short duration thing, maybe days, maybe a couple weeks. It'll be so severe, though, that we will notice it. The cloud will probably blow off the sun and come toward us if we're not engulfed in it at the same time because of charge ratios and particles being thrown off the sun, that kind of stuff. We'll see it here on the Earth as a darkening of the sun itself during the daytime, and the darkening at night because of this dust, this cloud, will make the moon's light dial way down until it's kind of blood red color, which is in keeping with the prophecies in the book of the Revelation, that the moon turns to blood, which I assume means the color red. But attending this same thing or preceding it may be the sun brightening very quickly into the ultraviolet range for a couple of weeks. Now, the ultraviolet can cause cancer in certain spectra, but not all ultraviolet will cause cancer. But the ultraviolet that's coming off the sun may increase 6 times, 7 times what it is now. If it were the infrared or the heat radiation coming off the sun, it would destroy life on the planet, destroy everything. I mean, if you imagine it's 100 degrees Fahrenheit during a hot day in the summer somewhere, and make that 700 degrees Fahrenheit even for a day, you'd all be dead and everything would be fried. So it's not that. The Bible does speak of a time in the Revelation where it will be, the sun's light will be as the light of 7 times what it is now, 7 days. If that were the heat radiation, as I said, it would hurt us. It would kill us. But there will be some increase of temperature on the planet when this ultraviolet light increases, and it will be toward the bright white, blue-white light, which people are seeing in the sun now. And not even with telescopes. I mean, they're just seeing it with the naked eye. The increase in temperature that does attend that will be much less, but it will be enough to kill trees and grass and fish and boil rivers and that kind of stuff. Again, all keeping with prophecies in the book of the Revelation of John, Revelation 2 John. The situation with the Hopi Indians, when we were down there, they know from their prophecy keepers that the sun is going to get very hot, but they can endure it by going underground into their mud kivas, like little igloos underground, that they've already been preparing and putting dried beans and corn and water and stuff down in there to stay for a couple of weeks. So they're putting a time frame on it for the same kind of thing that we're talking about in the prophecies of the Bible. This does tell me in this solar cycle, this grand solar cycle, that this may be the time. I don't know of any other time we've ever had such a situation where we've had such activity in the magnetic field, and hence the flares and CMEs on the sun. Just today, they've made announcements over in Europe and here in the United States, scientific community has, about a new discovery they've made with the supercomputers that the sun has shear waves, you know, like shearing waves inside of it, underneath the surface of it. And they think that these shearing waves are what are creating these anomalous magnetic field lines that come up with a solar flare and then break and recombine and stuff. It's been a mystery. Couldn't figure out how that fit into the equation of the sun. And in my theory of gravity, which I'm still developing the paper on, in fact, you can see animations and pictures of that on our website, standale.com. Go there and go down, scroll down the page where you see the microphone on the left. That tells you that you're in the place where I'm doing a live show at the moment. And over on the right, you'll see show images in blue. Click on that and get over to the thing that has pictures of a, looks like cutaway of a solar system or a planet, and dive into there. You'll see some things I'm talking about. But anyway, this gravitational field of the sun, like all gravitational fields, is created by spin in this invisible fluid of space. And as the star, in this case, ages, it starts to expand and pull apart the surface, just make it thinner as it's covering a greater surface area. I think we will see these the increase in the sunspots, which are holes in the chromosphere there of the sun. I think we'll see a greater increase of that in the next 12 to 15 months. Could be wrong. It's a guesstimate, and like all these guys guessing about it, that's what I'm doing. the magnetic fields are created at the same time the gravitational fields are by this kind of, I'll do it on the camera here, where the spinning field spins up to the polar regions and dives down inside and makes a shear wave go at angles to the surface wave, creating the outward sphere that we see of a star or a planet. And I think that they've just discovered what I've been working on for some time. They're trying to explain what they call the flux freezing theorem and the complex field dynamics of the magnetic field of the sun. But they all say that it's something to do now with a shear wave, which just aligns perfectly what I've been telling people about what causes gravity.
Very interesting.
Not finished saying that. I'm just trying to see here.
Oh, you covered so much there, Mr. Dale. We could really talk about that.
If I can ask, did you say X-class flares, M-class flares?
X-class flares.
Yeah,
are the biggest ones.
45.
Okay, so we are talking about X-class flares, right?
Right. Correct? Right. Right.
Wow.
We're not tiny things.
No. Okay. I just wanted to be clear. In my mind, I can barely understand the science behind it, the mechanics behind it, but I do know that this is a bad thing. So how is this going to affect the average person, obviously? One thing I can think of is, you know, and I, when I was younger, of course, you like to go out and get some sun and play on the beach. I mean, we're going to see an increase in skin cancer. You're going to see, just the effects of this are going to be, they're just going to be tremendous. Am I wrong, or is this something? I mean, you know, things that you don't normally think about, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
You don't. And think about this. If the sun does get hotter, say, by 60, 70, maybe even 80 degrees hotter, you will have to go underground or in your basements or caves or something and try to survive. Now, at a certain temperature out there, the black tar roads that we have all over the country, the older roads, will melt. And car tires will overheat and expand and explode. These are some of the things that we've addressed or thought about here in the past. Depending on how high that temperature gets, you could get bogged down in hot tar trying to get out of your car when it's stuck in that tar and the wheels have exploded. It's going to be rather dangerous because you're going to be stepping into hot tar, tarred and feathered without the feathers. So that's one effect that could happen during this peak when it really gets hot. The ultraviolet, there's only a certain bandwidth as far as we know of the ultraviolet spectrum that does create cancer in our skin cells. The other problem that happens is that the newer ultraviolet frequencies that are coming out of the sun are being absorbed by life on the planet, particularly very tiny life in the sea, things that are like plankton and small krill and things like that. They're absorbing that frequency range. There's two main frequencies that they use, and they're multiplying, and just living creates more heat in the oceans. So that is increasing to the heat signature of the planet simply because more things are absorbing the newer wavelengths of ultraviolet and converting it to heat, you know, down converting it to infrared.
Well,
the food chain interrupted, it's going to be hard.
Yeah, and I'm looking at the U.S. drought monitor here, and the United States, especially this southern Midwest to Southwest, is experiencing a D4 exceptional long-term drought. And we see, as you said, the sun seems to be getting brighter, and we've talked about this in past shows, and a lot of people talk about this, that the sun is getting brighter. Before, 30 years ago, they could look at it and it would be yellowish. Today, it's so bright white that you can't even look into the sun. You talked about the waves of that the sun is bringing, the solar waves. Are there talks of different types of unknown particles that they're seeing now from the sun's waves and flares, these charged particles? Or
I don't know. Have you read something about that? I didn't hear about that.
Honestly, I have a note card with a specific question written down, and I didn't have it with me. But no, there was something that came to my attention about the charged particles and how
how many, it was either extra particles being able to come through our magnetosphere or our atmosphere, and the effects of that would have on us. But either way, solar flares, do they have a correlation with earthquakes?
That's an interesting question, one that could be debated, I'm sure. The solar wind is like a Catherine wheel, you know, spiraling arms comes out, and we pass through more dense and less dense parts of it all the time as we orbit the sun. Now, the solar wind is primarily usually made of protons, positive charged particles, and they hit our magnetopause and our magnetic field, in essence, of the planet, and impart energy to the planet by the impacts into our magnetic field. Should the sun start putting out more of these, more energetic, then yes, it could affect our magnetic field and hence us. The solar wind is an extraordinary thing, how it intimately connects our magnetic field to the sun. Right now, the sun is approaching the middle of its Hale magnetic cycle, which is an 11-year cycle for one pole to shift to the other end of the other side of the sun. And then another 11 years, and they right themselves to where they were before. Now, that Hale magnetic cycle is a normal thing that attends a 22-year cycle of operation. If the Earth's magnetic field, as I've said before, if the Earth's magnetic field is weakening, which it is, this is not, you know, rocket science, then there is a point in time where the change in the north-south alignment of the magnetic field of the sun through the solar wind could connect to our magnetic field on Earth and flip-flop it and flip our magnetic poles. Now, it's interesting. NASA has on their site photographs of computer modeling of what would happen if the Earth was to shift its north and south magnetic poles, if it was to flip and reverse them. During that reversal process, which might take days, months, or years, or centuries, according to what they're saying, the planet would have three sets of magnetic poles, the main north-south, and two mini poles, north-south, space somewhere along the planet, due to the turbulence of the conductive fluid inside the Earth, the core, as it spins and changes its magnetic field. All this is just tightly linked with the solar wind and the magnetic field of the sun. You know, I think that we're going to see some unusual things, whether it's new particles or not, I don't know. But because our magnetosphere is weakening, and our magnetic field is weakening as it changes. It's not going to go to zero, but it'll weaken a great deal as it flips around. We're going to see more particles, more radiation as well, get through our magnetosphere and hit the surface of the planet. And this is not a good thing. We have an area of the planet on our atmosphere that is called the South Atlantic Anomaly right now, and it's thin. And a lot of radiation from space, you know, cosmic radiation, and from the sun, solar radiation, these waves get through that hole. That's why we don't fly through that. We don't send our astronauts through that. We don't put the space station through that area of the planet if we can help it, because it's such a weak shield. Just like in Star Trek, the shields are weak in that area, and therefore we're vulnerable underneath it. And people that have been under that, when it's thinned out a bit in the ocean there and up north of there in the islands on the east coast of South America, people have felt the ultraviolet increase as pinpricks all over their skin while they're out in the sun, and nausea and disorientation and diarrhea and stuff struck them just from the radiation getting through the hole, and they were on the fringe of it, the very fringe. There's going to be a lot of problems with it.
Now, Stan, the Bermuda Triangle, does this have any relationship to the Bermuda Triangle, what you're talking about, this South Atlantic anomaly?
Well, I don't know. The South Atlantic Anomaly is in a different ocean. Obviously, it's on the other side of South America, but and down to the South Atlantic, whereas the Bermuda Triangle is in the North Atlantic on above the equator. And there's another one like an area like the Bermuda Triangle over in Japan, in the Pacific side. And there have been several others reported, dead zones or areas in the ocean where they were, you know, like the Devil's Triangle or Bermuda Triangle. I have tried to plot that out and try to figure out why we would have something like the Bermuda Triangle occurring as a function of gravity or magnetism or whatever, trying to be more pragmatic rather than saying it's a portal to some parallel dimension or any of that stuff, just on going on the facts that we do accept in the scientific community. And I can't explain it. The Bermuda Triangle is definitely weird. It may be a huge area that has a lot of methane hydrates on the seafloor, and because the Earth is warming underneath there, that there are periodic releases of methane gas, which would cause boats to sink. They can't stay floating in methane gas impregnated water. Their buoyancy is lost and they sink. It doesn't exactly explain what happens to aircraft flying over the area, you know, like the Avenger Squadron in 1947, whatever it was, flight thingo, that disappeared when their magnetic compasses, they had two of them on board the aircraft, both failed, and that was the lead aircraft, and the rest of the squadron were following him, and theirs failed, and then the rescue craft goes out after them, and 8 hours later, it, with 11 crew or so, disappears as well. It doesn't explain how methane gas or, methane hydrogen gas getting up into the air would screw up their magnetic fields and disorient them and, make them fall to the sea. But yet they've never found any evidence where these guys went and their planes.
That was going to be my next question, Stan. I remember
Flight 91, something like that.
Yeah, they never found them, period, correct?
Right, right.
That's just really bizarre,
The reason I brought the Bermuda Triangles up, Stan, is because there's a friend of the show, a listener. We've been talking about this, and we've been looking into Lucius Trust, and they have their One World Religion, and one of the parts of their One World Religion includes triangles. And now you think of the Trilateral Commission and the people that were involved with that, and the Lucius Trust aspect, and how they, I'm not sure how familiar you are with Lucius Trust and what they preach, but we believe that there's some correlation or something that brought this all together, that there was a reason for these triangles, not that they are portals, but they are important to the underworld or dark side for some particular reason. That's why I wanted to ask that question, and I thank you for answering.
Well, all right. The Lucius Trust, as I recall, are responsible for publishing the Urantia book, right?
Yes. Was it Lucius Trust that published that, or there's a direct relationship between the two. Yes.
Well, their whole objective, if you have read the Urantia book or parts of it anyway, their whole objective is to turn people's minds toward a different view of the Bible and biblical history, and hence their reaction, people's reaction to what is coming as a fake arrival of a Messiah here on the planet with super technology. If you read the Urantia book, the first thing I noticed immediately was that they use the King James English in it when they're doing these and thous, that kind of stuff, to try to tie it back to your biblical feelings. And my thought was, well, why didn't you just write it in English, and why all this King James junk? Why didn't you just get on with it instead of going back a century or two to put the language out there like that? And the whole objective would be, obviously, to make you think that it came from the same source because it sounds churchy or biblically like you're used to. But it really does change things to, it looks more like our elder brothers in space, created this and they're coming to help us. And to a degree, the heavens are like that. But what they're saying is that the first lot that arrive here, posing as God, will be the real ones. And we're saying, no, that's not right. This is a fake landing, a fake, it's Satan and his people coming to pretend to be God. And they're going to have a lot of supporting evidence, but it's going to be faulted. And if you've got 95% truth and 5% lie, the whole thing is rotten. That's what I think is about to happen, and why the Lucius Trust and those have been for a generation now, maybe a generation and a half, have been putting out stuff into the media, whether it be printed or video or whatever, on automatic writings, seances and this kind of stuff, to turn people away from the basics in the Bible into other books and other writings, which in essence open up doubt about our own Bible and the veracity of it, the truth of it. I debated with the Theosophical Society guy. He was from Findhorn, and they even accept the fact that it's going to be a disappearance of a lot of people all at once on the planet, and that what we would call the rapture. But he says that's the people that are going to be taken off the planet who just can't get along with the new age vibrations. They're going to be, these people are going to be taken away to some other planet to learn their lesson and get their vibes right and all that kind of junk, and then come back later and be reborn and do some bodies here on Earth. But this is, you know, it is so clever and insidious in that that people will be fooled if they don't have a strong foundation in the Bible.
No, I understand, and you are talking right up our alley, and I believe pretty much the same thing, that there is going to be, just like you said, they push the higher consciousness. And I wanted to ask you, you mentioned frequency. I wanted to ask you about frequency and its effects on the human body. We know that it does have an effect on the human body and the mind. Are we seeing frequency weapons be used against the population on a daily basis? There have been reports of wind towers to cell phone towers emitting some type of frequency. They say that they can play with our moods to make us depressed or happy or sad, or basically like a zombie.
Yes, Stan, please say yes, because I've got to explain my moods to my wife. So,
yeah. You're becoming a zombie, yes, right. Look, I don't know. It is possible that we do know that radiation of different frequencies will produce different physiological effects in the body. This was tested in the early 1900s by Nikola Tesla, and he tested it on Tom Sawyer. Who wrote Tom Sawyer? My mind's just gone.
Mark Twain,
right. Mark Twain was a friend of Tesla's, and he came by Nikki's lab one day, because he made note of this in his memoirs. He said he came by Nikki's lab, and Nikki Tesla told him, hey, look at this. And he says, I want you to sit in this chair here in the middle of this electric field I'm producing, this frequency, and I found it does unusual things to your body. So he says, now Mark, he says, the only thing I want you to do, promise me, is that when I tell you to get out. Don't stay there. So the guy, Mark Twain, goes in and sits in the chair. Tesla turns on the field, and Mark Twain says, boy, that's great. My whole body feels rejuvenated and like massaged. And it, oh, Lord. And Tesla says, run. The John is that way. So Mark Twain jumped out of the chair and ran to the head. He had diarrhea. This had produced peristaltic motion in accelerated form in his body, you know, to clean him out. But it did feel great, except that it had the deleterious effect of making him have diarrhea. Now, that's one frequency. Frequencies can be made very innocuous, very small, and so that they hit certain atoms, certain collections of atoms, at a wavelength. And over a period of time, if a person is exposed to these in one site, your body or, you know, your tissues will start to absorb that frequency and build up a harmonic amount of energy from it in phase. And that's when you get affected. Now, whether the cell towers, whether the wind farms, the noise of that is doing, whether it's ultrasound or infrasound or, you know, electromagnetic radiation, I do know that various radiations will do different things to you. I've found when playing with Tesla coils myself that I got into trouble with around 150 kilohertz. It hurt my body. But if they've experimented, like I'm sure they have, in all the other frequency ranges they can produce, they will have found some, of course, that will disorient you. You can do that with sound. But there may be electromagnetic frequencies that can do that to your tissues, to your nerves. Whether they're doing it or not as a some nefarious act, I don't know. I just really don't know. But it is possible. That technology is here. You asked
Thank
me a
you.
While ago, Joe, about the triangles, you know?
Yes.
In the ancient religions, going back into Egypt, the triangles, for some reason, they had the triangles of existence. And one triangle like this would be pointing as man down here looking up at God at the top peak. And the other triangle was looking down like this, the peak pointing down to man from God, God looking at man. And when the two combined, strange enough, it made the Star of David, but when the two combined, it was a union of man with God. And that has persisted from the times of the first kingdom, the first period of the pharaohs in Egypt. Why? Three is a pretty, magical number in the Bible. You know, it's supposed to represent the triune, the three-part God. Maybe that's it. I just don't know. But the triangles do appear that far back and related to God.
Interesting.
If we have, a deception coming, then it may be related to that.
Wow. Yeah. The deception part bothers me a lot, Stan. I mean, it's when I think about the possibilities. I mean, we look at technology today and look how fast. I mean, it was only, 10 years ago when the televisions that we had, had the huge back ends, and they weighed, 600 pounds. I mean, they're just huge monsters. Now they're paper thin, but they're very thin. They're very, very far advanced. And also the holograms, the ability to create these holograms with the singers. This is what we know about. What don't we know about? What kind of technology is out there that we don't know about that could be manifested for nefarious purposes?
Well, it's, as you say, it's the ones we don't know about. But I have seen some promotional videos of a 3D laser thing that was done over in Germany, I think it was, where the side of a building had a matrix laid over it so they could produce 3D, live video on it. And it was really impressive. As long as you don't have to touch the hologram, you don't know whether it's solid or not. And if they did something like that with a charged atmosphere up above the planet, ionospheric charge or something like that in that area, it is possible in my mind for them to produce a three-dimensional image so that when it's being viewed from, say, America, at the same time over in China, they would see the side of it rather than the side that's facing you. And so it would appear to be a real solid object. Of course, if you got them touched, it would just be photons. It's not going to be like in Star Trek where you go into the holodeck and it's all real and touch and feel and that kind of stuff. It's not going to happen that way. But it could be visually made to look like something real. And that, you get back to that, you get back to the Blue Beam Project, where it's been proposed that a whole flotilla of UFOs be created by holograms in the atmosphere, and then several large craft would come down and visit one or more major cities and say, look, we're here to help you, but we're here in great number, to be rather ominous and threatening, in essence, to the population of the Earth. Only for Earth to find out, well, they're friendly, and they're going to help us set up a world government like theirs, wherever they come from. And that, of course, will be the great deception we all know is coming.
Wow.
Yeah. So,
and segues perfectly into my next questions. We see...
You guys ganged up on this, didn't you?
Sorry about that, Stan.
Yeah.
That's all right. Go ahead.
We have noticed an increase in asteroids, meteors, and UFO sightings. And whether, you could misinterpret one for the other, seeing a shooting star or a meteor, skipping across the atmosphere as a UFO. Either way, we know that May 31st, they're talking about this dark asteroid object coming near the Earth. It seems like they are discovering these asteroids more and more frequently, that are making these close calls with the Earth, and we are seeing what seems to be an uptick in meteors, and we have Comet Ison coming at the end of this year. Aside from what you've already talked about, the spiritual aspect of this, and how we could see things happen and things done for a reason, as to mock or to make it look like prophecy is being fulfilled, what other explanations could we see as an increase for such a vast increase in UFO sightings, especially, and close call asteroids
and meteorites? Okay. We may be passing through a dark group of meteors or potential meteors, asteroids, potential meteorites, and asteroids. The thing is that unless a body, a small body like 300 meters in diameter or smaller, unless it has some sort of light bouncing off of it, like sunlight, and it reflects the light rather than absorbs it, we're going to have a great deal of trouble even detecting that it's there. And if you can't detect that it's there, obviously you can't detect its orbit when it's coming. So as it gets closer, the small amount of reflectivity some of these might have is starting to reveal its presence. And we might only have 2 or 3 day notice, when some of the larger ones hit our way, you know, the 300-meter and smaller larger ones. The great big ones, we should be able to detect, you know, several years in advance and plot their courses. The increase in UFO activity, real UFO activity, can be determined by the reports that talk about these bright lights flying in formation, stopping, turning, zipping off at great speed, or making very zigzaggy movements at high speed. Meteorites don't do this. They have pretty much a one direction, one vector course coming in, and you know that's it. They leave this long cloud trail behind them, and they don't stop and break and go the other direction. So the increase in UFO sightings can either be due to some secret projects for, you know, China or United States, Russia, making new high-speed aircraft, which I doubt, or it could be due to real increased numbers of extraterrestrial or at least non-human driven and made craft. The thing about it is, we've all known that there's been a cover-up since 1947 at Roswell, at least that far back. And it's been, you know, judiciously denied by presidents. We're now getting to a point where we have a second-term president who has nothing to lose in political, you know, capital if he is the one to say, yes, we lied to you, they're here, and we're going to introduce them to you. People can forgive that, you know, or it won't matter to him one way or the other, but they could forgive a second-term president. And if they didn't, it didn't matter because he's not going to get elected again unless they change the Constitution. So I think right now we're approaching a period in political history where a president of the United States could reveal the fact that we've been lying to you about, you know, flying saucers, aliens being here for some time. All these things, to me, are coming to a head as so many of the crisis curves are driving the population of the planet toward demanding a solution to Earth, not just some country. The people are wanting to solve the weather and the climate changes and food availability. They're wanting to have a stable, fair global economy. They want to have fair laws for all people on the planet. They want to get rid of our leaders and our congresses and all the people that have gone corrupt. They're looking for an answer right now.
Yeah, you're right. And they, the New Age movement has picked up on this perfectly and playing right into their hands. If there was going to be a mock alien invasion or aliens posing as the saviors, they sure have done a tremendous job in already knowing how to deceive many without knowing what was going to happen. Because that's what they push, that there are aliens that are going to come save us and teach us how to live, and the Oprahs of the world and, you know, the higher consciousness teachers and Christ consciousness. We hear that word a lot. And people really need to understand that there are a whole big group of people trying to deceive the only people that can hinder their agenda, which are true believers in Christ. And because we will not fall for the trick of a one new Messiah here walking the earth among us. We know when he comes, he is coming up.
We know how he's coming, and we know the conditions under which he's coming. But Stan, you know, we've just covered a lot of ground here. One of the questions I had, and when Joe was telling me about you coming on tonight, and I had talked to a couple of people about your appearance tonight, they want to know as do I. What are you looking at right now that is most concerning of all the things that you've seen, whether it be today or last week or last month or over the last couple of months? What concerns you the most right now?
I guess it's the speed with which all this is coming down, the great deception. It is ramped up incredibly over the last year or two. And, you know, looking at the administration of the White House at the moment, they are so open about just putting the screws to the people of the United States that I can't believe that they would be that open. I thought they'd at least try to hide some of what they're doing to take away our civil liberties and, you know, our Second Amendment rights and many of our other rights as well, freedom of the press and whatever. But that does worry me, because very soon people like yourself and me and others who write books or talk to people about what's happening will no longer have access to the people to warn them or to help them. because our communication will be cut off, and possibly some of us will be cut off as well. That worries me. That's clear and present danger to me and my family, and to you and your family. Since I've been expecting the alien card to be played for so many years now waiting for the right time, right time, that's happening now. That does frighten me like much, essentially. It lets me know that we're getting close to the end of this time when we have to be here on the planet ourselves. And it encouraged me to think that the good Lord is going to take us to a place of safety out of that. But it's not so much fear of that. It's just, you know, I just bemoan what used to be America that I knew in the early 50s, you know. It was a place of imagination and wonder and discovery and happy times and hamburgers for 15 cents at McDonald's and, you know, convertibles and girls that rolled out on roller skates to serve you your drinks at the local Dairy Queen or something. I mean, it was a good time, but that time has long passed in this country, and that makes me sad. I miss that.
I do remember those times as well, you know. And you mentioned something here about the hubris, Stan, of the openness of this failure to they build themselves as the most transparent administration. Well, they are transparent.
In that respect, they are.
You know, yeah. And I was talking, too, with some people about our ability, you know, how long do we have before we're not going to be able to talk as freely as we are right now. And I think that's a major concern. But in terms of communication, like the Internet, this comes from a listener out of the UK listening currently to our live broadcast. Do you believe, Stan, that the government of the United States specifically, or some other, perhaps like through the United Nations, are going to censor what's on the Internet anytime soon?
Well, I think so. There's been a great deal of discussion between many of the leading nations about the Internet and how to control it, and with political bodies wanting to tax it for various sales and stuff that occur, there's a financial incentive there as well. So I think that fairly shortly, you know, a year or two, maybe less, that they'll be putting heavy controls on the Internet, and those of us that use it as a communication medium, a sales medium for the kind of stuff we're doing, I mean, my book and Holly's book, we have a cross on it, you know, Christian cross on either the front or the back cover. And I think that that's very rapidly going to be censored as well, so that it looks like you're proselytizing, and that's a no-no, unless you're a Muslim, of course. But,
Yeah, Stan, that's right on the money. I mean, Christianity will be illegal in the United States sooner than later, as we see all the rhetoric coming against it, all the different angles they're working to take it away from people.
Joe, before you go on, I want to go over to Stan's house, and we're going to throw in a movie of, I don't know, Stan, something from the 50s or 60s, and we'll just sit there, eat popcorn, and watch the movie and kind of...
American Graffiti.
There you go. You know, some of the stuff is so heavy when you really think about it. It really kind of, it's psychologically, it just really plays with your mind and plays with your heart and spirit. But I'm going to talk about
do that. We can do that, Doug. We'll put on a good movie that's a skate movie, and we'll have popcorn or hot chocolate and popcorn or something like that. You know, and that's how you escape from at least a little bit of the daily news. It's so bad. And it doesn't get any better, does it?
I wish I could say it does, but it seems like it's on an exponential, it seems like it's on a rocket ship toward, you know, this incredible, whatever's going to happen, it seems like it's going to happen pretty soon. But I'm going to talk to Dr. Jim. He's got some questions about Fukushima, I think.
Yeah, we only have a few minutes left, Stan, and this hour just flew by. Fukushima and the United States nuclear problems we are seeing here, the Palisades nuclear plant, the San, the other one. There's one in Michigan, there's one in Southern California. Yes, and Fukushima. We saw articles that farmers are being allowed to grow rice for mass sale or mass consumption
on the ground where you can't even stay the night.
Yes,
yep. It's standing up. What do you see as a future of the Northern Hemisphere with all this radiation flooding the Northern Hemisphere? And is Fukushima out of control? Is it too late to save save things as far as Fukushima in your mind?
Fukushima is really a trouble spot, but it's not going to be the only trouble spot that's nuclear. I think we're going to have problems here in the United States, seeing as how so many of our nuclear facilities had been built over fault lines that weren't of any importance because they weren't active at the time, but now becoming active. And if that weren't enough, I think there are going to be some terrorists that manage to slip in and melt down one or more of our nuclear reactors near a populated area. So we're going to have our own Fukushima problems. Someone here a few months back was asking me, why don't you move down to Chile where land is cheap and, you know, it's steps back a generation or so in technology and stuff. You can have a peaceful life down there, whatever. Well, to begin with, I'm not eager to leave the country anyway, but couldn't afford it, secondly. And thirdly, Fukushima's radiation pattern in the ocean is striking all that coast of South America. I mean, it's lighting it up down there. The streams of radiation are in the sea and are already hitting the Chilean coast, not to mention the earthquake increases down there. So that's just one little problem, Fukushima. I see many more nuclear problems coming. And amongst those is the potential for nuclear war over the Middle East situation between Israel, Iran, and Syria. The biblical prophecy does say that Damascus in Syria will become a ruinous heap overnight and will never be inhabited again. Now, that sounds to me to be nuclear. And this could happen if Israel finally has had enough of the biowarfare concentrations and developments in Syria and they nuke Damascus. Or Damascus may nuke itself, trying to get a nuclear thing mounted on a missile to go to Israel, and it may go off and blow up Damascus at their own hand. If that happens, everybody's still going to blame Israel, but whether they did it or not. And my point is, that will escalate the threat of nuclear war, and we may see some of the suitcase nukes go off in the United States that have been sneaked in by terrorists, and then those are going to be more clear and present dangers to us than the Fukushima fallout.
I got to ask you this question because this segue is perfect into the suitcase nuclear issue. This is Ken from South Dakota asking, would you please ask Mr. Deo if he knows whether there are any, looks like tactical nuclear devices located inside the continental United States, and if so, about how many and maybe location. So there you have it.
You know, I'm not an active member of NCIS Los Angeles, so I can't tell you. I have no idea. I've heard rumors of up to six or seven, but they're just rumors. They're hearsay. And if I knew that, I'd probably be working for Homeland Security.
Well, yeah, I guess so.
But, last question, Stan. We're running out of time here at the top of the hour. Earthquakes, where do you see a hotspot? Where should we look at? And then anything you want to say to take us out that we need to watch for we haven't mentioned yet?
Yeah, I need to know which vacation home to sell first, Stan. So you tell me.
Say that again.
I need to know which one of my many vacation homes to sell first. I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. But, earthquake.
Okay. Seriously, I would sell any homes that I've got on the coast of the United States. Certainly up the Mississippi along the New Madrid fault line and west of the New Madrid fault line or west of the Mississippi into Arkansas and Oklahoma. I would be concerned about the seismic activity there. And I guess you better get yourself a radiation meter to take to the supermarket so that you can test all your fish for whether they glow in the dark or not. I don't know how you're going to check for, parasite infections and various other things that are passed on to the vegetables by the farm workers that are illegals. But, it's getting to the point where you're going to have your freeze-dried food to depend on because the stuff you get at the supermarket is either going to be irradiated or, dangerous or too expensive or something. We've been warning people, you and I both, for some time that they need to get food that's storable and keep it for 15 years if you need to. But that's
well, by the way,
that does, correct me if, I mean, that does work if you have a portable radiation detector for,
yep,
like nuclear type thing. It does work to take to the grocery store, does it not?
Yes, it will. And it won't get the stuff like the chemicals they use in the Gulf of Mexico to break up the oil spill. That's found in some seafood and, you know, like oysters and things like that as an actual black substance you can see. It's not radioactive. So I'm kind of off seafood for a while. Just too many days to it.
Gotcha. Well, that's interesting. I didn't know if, seriously, I didn't know if, for example, my wife buys salmon, and we like to have salmon, and I don't know where it comes from, actually. I mean, how do you tell? I mean,
who's going to tell you the truth about their product they're trying to sell to you?
Exactly. So if you did have a portable nuclear device like a Nuke Alert or whatever the brand name would be out there, certainly take it to the supermarket and give it a once over, the C3 or whatever.
At this rate, you're going to need to wear a health mask, one of those little white masks that you strap on like the nurses wear to keep from getting infected by various contagious diseases. You know, that's the other thing you got to worry about. And you wear gloves in the supermarket so you don't get, you know, contact of various things that might be lurking on the food itself, on the dirty cans or on the carts that you're wheeling around in.
Good point.
It's just common sense, really, in this day and age.
Wow. Wow. That says a lot.
Mr. Deo, we want to thank you for being on our show again. You can find Stan Deo's website at standeo.com. Get his books, The Cosmic Conspiracy, or Holly Deo's book, Dare to Prepare, and essential in any preparing situation. It is the, some call it the Bible of preparedness books. Any closing comments before we let you go, Stan?
No, I think that's about it. As you mentioned, people can visit our website at Holly Updates News 6 days a week, and it's all current news for people who are awake and aware. Good night, guys.
Stan, you're a blessing. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. You have a great weekend.
Talk to you again. Bye-bye.
All right. And, folks, definitely bookmark standeo.com. That's standeo.com. We will have a permanent link up on our website to his website. And, of course, Dare to Prepare, one of the best preparation books you can buy. And, of course, The Cosmic Conspiracy. I got to tell you won't put it down. It's just a fantastic information-filled book. Folks, you're listening to the Hagman and Hagman Report. I'm Doug Hagman. With me is Joe Hagman. Together, we are the Hagman and Hagman Report. We'll be right back after these brief messages. Stay with us. Have a good night.
Ladies and gentlemen, the very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence, on infiltration instead of invasion, instead of elections, on intimidation instead of free choice. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised. No expenditure is questioned, no secret is revealed. That is why the Athenian lawmaker Solon decreed it a crime for any citizen to shrink from controversy. I am asking your help in the tremendous task of informing and alerting the American people. Confident that with your help, man will be what he was born to be, free and independent.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
Yeah, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number three of this Thursday edition of the Hagman Hagman Report. It is a live broadcast Thursday, May 23rd, 2013. This just in from our tremendous Troy from the Christians United Broadcasting Network. Do you realize, ladies and gentlemen, that Germany, the country of Germany, is blocking our broadcast of John F. Kennedy's secret society speech? They refuse to play that? Really?
Copyright infringement, apparently. Even though they...
It's actually not. I mean, I could show you.
It's fair use.
Well, no, it's even beyond that. That's not even true. Wow. But let me say this, ladies and gentlemen. You can find this online at HomelandSecurityUS.com, and certainly if you want to hear to our friends in Germany, if you want to hear the Kennedy speech about secret societies, you can certainly go to YouTube and find it. I want to say hello to our neighbors to the North, CanadaFreePress.com. Bookmark that website as well. I want to thank Stan Dale for joining us for that hour. What an interesting hour we had. Also, I just want to mention one more time here, our good friends at AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com, they've actually done like a money bomb for us, or doing a money bomb for us. I guess that's what they call those, right? Like a fundraiser. From now until the end of the show on tomorrow night, their goal, and God bless these people, is to raise money for us to keep us on the air. $10,000 actually is their goal. But folks, their passion, their determination is really at the core of it all, is to help you and I survive. It's to help fellow Christians survive, prepare for what we all know are challenging times to come, to say the least. You know, our show, our efforts, we believe we're waking up people, and I think we're making a difference. We're actually number 71 on iTunes, ranked number 71 on iTunes, despite all of our clumsiness on air, despite the fact that sometimes it sounds like amateur hour. We'll be the first to admit it. I'll tell you, we'll be the first to admit it. But here's the deal. American Survival Wholesale, they've agreed to donate 25% of their gross proceeds of their entire selection of stun guns. Now they retail for right around $40, $39.95. And I got to tell you something, folks, I would not send my daughter out to work or even to the grocery store, or my wife even to the grocery store, without at least a stun gun. And they want to sell 1,000 units, and I know there's 1,000 people out there in our listening audience that can use or don't have stun guns and certainly can afford one. It's not about the money for us, please. It's not about that. It's about your protection, please. Because soon, and I have a feeling in the gut, in my gut, that we're not going to be able to buy stun guns pretty soon, any type of offensive weapons. So get them while you can. They have quality products. It's American Survival Wholesale, and they've even agreed to provide 10% of all the gross proceeds of their complete line of 7-day and 72-hour survival kits and survival vests. I got to tell you, quality, top-notch merchandise. And I just want to say thank you to them, but more importantly, well, equally important, is folks, get yourself prepared. Please, get yourself prepared, because we know bad things are coming. There's a bad moon arising.
And I would like you to check, too, if you haven't already, read Bad Moon Rising on CanadaFreePress.com. Leave a comment there, or on HomelandSecurityUS.com. And also there's a new article up today on HomelandSecurityUS.com. And we're working on some more disclosures, rather important disclosures, that hopefully will be published here tomorrow or the next day at CanadaFreePress.com, as well as our website, and that's HomelandSecurityUS.com. Wow. And don't forget about the National Insecurity Seminar.
Yeah.
Register for that.
Also, this weekend is Memorial Day weekend, correct?
Yeah. How'd that happen?
We have not talked about Monday, if we're going to do a show. I say we do one.
I'm going to do a show on Monday. I was going to tell you that. I was going to say that if you want to take it off, go ahead. But I'm going to do a show on Monday. What do you think? We should just do it. And
I'll be here with you then.
You can fire up the Barbie and join right along with us.
Great. That's great. I was looking forward to doing that. And we will be, when we are traveling to our seminar in Apex, North Carolina, we will be broadcasting live from there also.
Absolutely. The thing is this, and we're also putting together that fourth hour, and it's no small task. You know, it's not like flipping on a switch and being able to do things. There's a lot of planning involved in this, and it's going to be Dayside, basically, is going to be the name. Dayside from the dark side, perhaps. I don't know. But we're going to be providing you real-time information as to what's happening over in the Middle East, over where it's daylight when it's dark here. That's something that we're going to be working on as well.
One last announcement.
Sure.
Last Saturday, I was on Omega News. This is on Blog Talk Radio with Scott Kessler, and it was broadcast today earlier. Just before the show or during the show, I'm going to put a link in the chat room, and it is Omega News, the episode from 5/23. It aired today. You guys check it out and listen if you are able and can, because it was a great show. And I want to thank Scott because he wrote a book and he sent it to me, and I don't know if I brought it with me or not, The Omega Manifesto, an excellent, excellent book. I just started to read it. And it's fantastic. I want to say thank you, Scott, for the interview and for the book. And we will be talking with you soon.
Yeah, exactly. Now, we've got a lot more news to get into. One thing that I do want to mention, because before the top of the last hour, before Stan came on, we were talking about what happened in London, and we were talking about Islam and Christianity. Look, folks, there is this dramatic pressure to really shield the American public from the truth of Islam. And I know that people will say, well, that sounds pretty bigoted, racist to some extent, but bigoted in terms of the religion. Well, if you really study the Quran, if you understand what Islam is all about, you'll understand the basis behind that statement. But the London mayor, and I want to thank Marianne for this, Daniel Greenfield wrote this, the London mayor is completely wrong to blame this killing on Islam. Well, what in the world do you blame this on? Or, you know, what's the motive? You've got motive, means, and opportunity. On his Twitter account, London Mayor Boris Johnson called the murder of a British soldier by two Muslims a sickening, deluded, and unforgivable act of violence. Of course it was. But he has said that the blame for this murder lies with the warped mindset of his killers. Now, one obvious point. It is completely wrong, he says, to blame this killing on Islam. Meanwhile, the killers shouting Allahu Akbar or Allah Akbar as they are attempting to decapitate their victim.
Now, I did not watch this video.
Yeah.
There people literally standing around videotaping it instead of trying to help the soldier who was being assaulted?
Well, here's how it looked to me, okay, and folks in the chat or listening to this or whatever, it looked like this the victim was struck by a vehicle first, and may or may not have been pinned or thrown or something happened. He was struck by a vehicle. And then from there, the perpetrators went after him and were using a meat cleaver type instrument along with a knife. Now, as he was lying on the road. Now, having said that, there were people that were walking by, and there were people that were watching. There were people that were, I want to say, spectators, if you will. But there was also one person, at least one person, videotaping the killer. Now, it's not clear to me, and this is one of the questions I had asked and have yet to have an answer. Was this person related in any way, shape, or form to the perpetrators? Or was this just some person with a video camera who happened to be on site? That would be one of the big questions, or even like a cell phone video type thing. This is what we have to look at. There appeared to me, and folks, you can take a look at the video yourself. There appeared to me this walk on by people, this not wanting to become involved, not seeing what was before their very eyes. Now, if you're unarmed, though, I don't know if you're going to try to stop a guy with a meat cleaver.
Exactly where I was going next. Because they are gun-free zone.
Gun-free, sure. But not machete-free or not the meat cleaver-free or not knife-free, but gun-free. So.
But see, that's not gun. Once you get rid of the guns, the violence stops, right?
As exemplified by this latest incident, of course. I've seen the argument, by the way, on places where, he wasn't shot, so, that's...
Piers Morgan, you're free to call in. 661-244-9839 is the number, and we will be taking calls here in a minute. And Piers, you're more than happy, if you want to call in, you can call in and state your point, that it is the guns that kill people. And sadly, I'm joking, because that was... really a crusade he went on, an anti-Second Amendment. And it's now come out by Ed Schultz and Lawrence O'Donnell and the people from MSNBC back to Piers Morgan, that the agenda is to confiscate the guns. They don't want any guns. The Second Amendment is bad. The Second Amendment, it needs to go, period. Then they just flat out came out and said it. We've had that... person in New Jersey, confiscate, confiscate, confiscate. We had Scott Bach on, or I think it was Scott Bach, a week ago Monday, and he was talking about what happened in that New Jersey hearing. And there is just this continuation of this push towards getting the guns out of the hands of the American people. Now, we see so much going on in the news, so much happening in, as far as the quote-unquote scandals, and I say that because what are we not seeing that they're doing right now? What are they setting this up for? Do you really think Holder is going to go to jail? Do you really think Obama is going to go to jail? Or you think this is a diversion to this, a stall tactic and a way of getting people
getting
off their game,
getting diverted from, right. Exactly.
From the spiritual issues to so involved into the political spectrum, where they had a piece when they were focusing on X, Y, and Z. Now they're looking over here because they see everything that's going on. It almost, with all this, it almost seems like they're trying to bring the Tea Party back in a more violent way. The way it looks like this is being, shown to us.
Well, I don't quite see it that way, and we you and I can have this discussion at a different time. But if you take everything cumulatively, look at everything cumulatively. You can even start, ladies and gentlemen, from the lack of documentation of this alleged president without a birth certificate. Isn't it interesting that the very people who are complaining now about what's taking place didn't really care about his bona fides, about his eligibility? Oh, that was a distraction. Isn't that interesting? Well, now we find out, or based on the preponderance of evidence, at least I would call it that, that we have a Manchurian candidate in the White House, a man who has essentially stolen elections. Well, how does he do that? Well, you know, imagine 100% voting for Obama at different precincts. And I mean, the voter fraud is rampant. But you know, you take all of these issues, the very issues that some had called distractions, and look where we are right now. But you take them cumulatively. Look at history. Look at what happened during the Clinton administration. We don't need a special prosecutor right now because we don't have the time. The only way we cannot fight this politically, we have to do this legally, because we're looking at crimes, not scandals. And I think that that's what really we have to drive that home. We have to look toward the RICO laws, look at perhaps grand juries presenting indictments, jailable offenses. I mean, this is what we need to do. Are there conspiracies? Of course. You know, is this a conspiracy to really take over the United States? I think that this is what we're seeing right now. Did it just happen? No, of course not. It didn't have to happen.
Well, the conspiracy to take over the United States has already been complete, and it's been complete for a long time. The only thing incomplete about the takeover is the actual implementation of the plans or the agenda. And we are seeing a lot of that now, as you just said, yes.
Well, you know, the IRS by itself, as a group, compared, I mean, well, look at this. It's Chicago mob politics. If you accept, even at the very least, if you accept the IRS crime and scandals, whatever you want to call it, I prefer crime. But if you look at the IRS alone, did they not, by the very definition of conspiracy, conspire to take over the election or influence the election, shall we say? Look at what unions had done back in the 60s and 70s, the union thuggery that went on, the Chicago union thuggery, the Chicago thuggery. This is what we're seeing here on a larger scale with the IRS. The IRS alone, as a group, conspired, as I see it, they have acted as a criminal organization. So therefore, a political solution is not possible. This is a criminal problem. The Attorney General Holder should recuse himself, or somehow be recused, and we need to take this. The law that applies here is the RICO statute, and because a lot of this too, it's look at the money aspect of this. Who are the beneficiaries of this conspiracy? Again, we don't need, nor should we ask for, a political solution. Rather, we should require a criminal prosecution, and that's what we need. Is this, or are these all diversions? I don't think so.
I'm not sure yet. We're going to have to go to the phone lines, see what you guys think. We're going to go to 864 area code first. Thanks for calling the Hagman Report. You're live.
Hey, I was just calling because I was thinking about Obama and when he was elected 5 years ago, and how so many of the celebrities got behind him. He's like the first sort of celebrity president that we've had, because I remember when Oprah was out campaigning with him, and just the whole United States and the world, everybody knows who she is. And, you know, her talk show, everybody loved her talk show, and just, you know, right in there with her and everything. Well, she eventually, you know, she was a Bible-believing Christian at one time, but eventually went over to the dark side, but everybody loved her, and so she got behind him. And I think so many people wanted to have the first black president too, and so a lot of young people were voting for him because he was doing all of these activities, like, you know, Oprah was behind him, and then he was Facebooking everybody. I think that was before Twitter. I'm not sure if Twitter was out 5 years ago or not. Maybe it was. But anyway, he was doing all the latest cool things, you know, to communicate with the young people. And, of course, he has the look. You know, he's got the smile and the charm and everything. And so many young people today are not well educated. I mean, they don't know anything. I mean, the public schools just are not teaching history. They don't know anything about history. They don't know anything about politics. And so they go with this celebrity mentality. It's like the celebrities are running the country in some ways. Does that make sense?
Perfect sense.
Yes, it does. And the big problem I see with that is how people put other people on pedestals and look to other people as role models, as people that they should strive to be like, instead of looking at the only person who's on the earth that we should strive to be like, our Lord and Savior. They look everywhere else, and the people allow that to happen by playing into their ego.
I agree, but caller, here's what I also see as well. I also see the end game result of a larger architecture, a larger framework. You know, to me, we're seeing the product of what has been years and decades in the making. I don't know if you see that or not.
I do see that. And I just, it hasn't happened overnight. But I just think that, you know, taking, well, first of all, they took the Bible out of the schools, you know, so people don't even know their Bibles anymore. And then they took prayer out of the schools. And then they took, you know, so we've been just systematically over the last 100 years or so just removing God from every public sphere of our country. And so all of this other stuff has come in, you know, because we don't have God's approval or protection, and he is allowing this stuff to happen. You know, and remedial judgments as a way to call us back to him, but it's not happening, as you can see. And so many people's eyes are closed, and you guys talk about this all the time, and I'm out in this community shopping and doing things, and, you know, I'm always mentioning, well, what's going on in the world, and trying to get people to think about what's happening in our world, because they know something's going on, but they just continue to go about their daily business as if nothing's going on. And there are very few that are really awake. I mean, you guys are opening the eyes of a lot. There's right. Very few that are awake. But I'll just say one thing, because I know you probably have a lot of callers, but I thought then when a person was converted to Islam that they changed their name, you know, and Barack Hussein Obama is a Muslim. Sounds like a Muslim name to me. And I, you know, I remember reading about Malcolm X when I was in college many years ago, and I, you know, they changed their name, don't they? I mean, so it's very obvious that he's a Muslim. I mean, well, am I right about that?
Yeah. Well, you're talking about two different things. First of all, when you convert to Islam, it's my understanding it is not necessary. It's almost like as a Christian or a Catholic, when you're baptized, you assume, for example, the name of a saint, or confirmed, I should say, you assume is the name of a saint. You take on an extra name, shall we say, in confirmation. But in Islam, it's not. I don't believe it's a requirement to change your name, at least not publicly or legally. Okay, that's one thing. However, we have a man in the White House. Now, this is related but distinctly different. We've got a man in the White House who was known as Barry Satoro and now Barack Hussein Obama, and there's been no documentation whatsoever to prove that there was any legal name change from Barry Satoro to Barack Hussein Obama or vice versa. In fact, we've got a third name yet in there as well, a third surname in there as well. So it's a very curious situation. And caller, let me ask you a question. If the week of 9/11, if on 9/12 or 9/13 of 2001, if I would have stopped you in the supermarket and said, you know what, 7 years from now we would elect a president by the name of Barack Hussein Obama, given all of the things that happened the day before or that week, and Islam, the 19 Muslim Arab Muslim hijackers being blamed for this, would you have believed me?
I really don't know, because I remember that, you know, I was in the grocery store the next day after 9/11 shopping, and I remember talking to people, and I just said, this is going to change everything. I just walked around my neighborhood by myself just saying, Lord, something's going to change. This is going to change. I just knew somehow that it was going to change everything. But I wasn't at the time, really, because I was involved in raising my young children at the time. I didn't know how it was going to change. I didn't know much about terrorism. I mean, I really didn't. I mean, it was a wake-up call for all of us. I mean, I think people in the military and reporters and people like that knew that terrorism was, a big threat to our country. But I think just speaking for myself, I really didn't. I mean, I was just involved in raising my kids, and you're real busy, and you just don't think about it. But I did. I was in the grocery store, and I would talk to people the day after. I said, this is going to change everything. Food prices are going to go up. I didn't know how it was going to change. I just knew it would. And no, it's rampant. I mean, terrorism is rampant, and it seems like they have a free reign. I don't know if it's our administration or all of the administrations of the world are just sort of allowing it to happen, and it's okay. I don't know. I just don't get it. It's got to change, but I don't know what the answer is.
Well, and that's why we talk about the New World Order. That's why, for example, in the second hour yesterday, Joe and I spoke of, for example, the CFR, Council on Foreign Relations, and the Trilateral Commission, because there is a push to the New World Order. And it's our belief that Islam is a tool of the New World Order. So this is where the change is coming from, and this is what's the impetus for change, is something bigger. Because, you know what, caller, you can go on the internet and you can look at different sites that take Islam to task for this and for that, but what they don't give you is what is beyond that particular situation, is how Islam is being used to ferret in there, to push in the New World Order. So we have.
You're right. I really don't know how it's. You're right. I don't know how it's being used to usher in the New World Order. I really don't. But I bet there. I'm sure you're right. There is a connection.
There is, and we try to connect the dots, because what we're seeing here, and what most people are seeing when they talk about Islamic terrorism, they're seeing one side of, let's say, a dice. People are familiar with dice, you know. They're seeing just one side of that die, for example. There are multiple sides to it, and that whole dice represents the culmination of what these globalists want, and that's one world government. They're using the terrorists as a tool. And by the way, terrorism is a tactic. So when people say war on terrorism, that's incorrect. Terrorism is a tactic. It is not a target. And with that, I will leave you with your
thoughts. Okay, thank you very much, and thank you for your work.
Good
and
job.
We all love you guys. God bless you.
Love you, too. Thank you. Thank what you. A great caller, John.
Thank you. Yeah,
great call.
Fantastic calls. We always have fantastic calls because we have the best audience. And we're going to move right along and go to area code 580. You're up next. You're live on the Hagman and Hagman Report.
Hey, how you guys doing? Pleasure to listen to you.
Pleasure having you.
Fantastic. What's on your mind?
Hey, well, you know, I'm a fairly young guy in my 30s. You know, I've caught on to a lot of this stuff that's been going on since I was about 19 or so. And so in the last 10 years, you know, I've noticed that the atmosphere, you know, people are kind of coming aware to what's going on. But my question is for you, you know, you guys have been involved in this a lot longer. Has it always been that way, or is the atmosphere really changing, if you get what I'm saying? Because we've been through the Cold War, and we've been through, you know, Desert Shield and all that stuff. But, you know, now it's almost like it's
unbelievable.
You know what,
caller, I remember a caller I remember. The short answer to your question, has it always been this way? The short answer is no. I remember when the Iranian hostage crisis back in 1979 began and Nightline was started, and then you had Desert One, the attempt to rescue the hostages, the 52 American hostages in Iran. And I remember thinking back then, wow, we are at the really tip of something that's going to change everything. But, you know, the changes were incremental. And as we went through the 80s, we saw various things happen. For example, the hijacking of John Tesrick, TWA flight. I can't remember where the sailor was shot and thrown overboard in 1985, I believe it was.
Was it 800, was it?
No. But everything was incremental. So to answer your question, however, no, I don't believe, and feel free to correct me or to add your own opinions, callers and listeners, but no, I think things have just dramatically accelerated here over the last 10 years or 13 or 12 years, but even more than that, accelerated even greater over the last five.
Yeah, it's one of those things that, you know, you try to, well, I think 5 years ago, I mean, you try to talk to people about this stuff, as you're saying, and yeah, they wouldn't get it. But now, even some of the, what we'd say, you know, hardcore liberals, however you want to name them, are even starting to come around. And especially with the stuff with Obama now, he's getting hammered pretty hard, and so is his administration. So, I mean, you know, I don't know if people are coming wise or he ticks the wrong people off or something, you know. But, yeah, it's just, I was always wondering that, you know. You know, is it just me or is this really things kind of winding up to wind down here? But that was my thought, guys. I appreciate your time.
Well, thank you very much for the call. We really appreciate that. And I think, Joe, when that caller mentioned one thing, I think, too, that, you know, there comes a time, and I believe whether it's Obama or whoever it might be, when that person becomes suddenly, shall we say, they lose their usefulness for the overall goal and objective.
Yeah.
And when that happens, oh, boy, watch out, because they become dangerous. The people behind the scenes become dangerous. And this is what I believe what we're seeing right now.
They are just as big, much used as tools as any other faction that is being used right now. We're going to move on. Area code 916, thanks for your patience. We're coming to you next. Goodbye, I'm on the Hagman & Hagman Report.
Hi, Doug. Joe, it's Lars from, I just got back from Israel. I was there for 18 days.
Shalom. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. I'm blessed, and I just asked the Lord to just what He deposited in our journey would be deposited upon you in Yeshua's name. And, you know, there's so much more, and I can just give you a couple quick highlights. The deception that's in Israel is unbelievable. I spent 11 days in Jerusalem just walking the streets with my shofar and praying and just, you know, encountering people. And what I found between Jerusalem, Tel Aviv, and Jaffa, asking many different Israelis, 60% of the population does not believe in God. That shocked me.
Flat out,
the way I
wait a second. Okay, you're not differentiating between Jews. You're just talking people. 60% of the people that you talk to just don't have any belief in the higher deity.
Yeah, I had just asked, and they said, well, this was brought to my attention that they would say, and this was multiple people, that 60%+ of the population of Israel does not believe in God. And I was just shocked. So that was one thing that was brought to my attention. The other one would be to engage them and walk up and just say that how angry God is. And they would look at me with this odd look and say, why is He angry? And I would say, because of sin. And just by saying that, they humbled themselves and they'd say, you're right. So, you know, the day that I left, I found it interesting because I knew the Lord was going before me. They did the strike on Syria and hit that munitions dump basically about 24 hours before we arrived. And so it was kind of interesting. It was peaceful for the most part. They had some, you know, typical protests, but I just wanted to engage the people, sound the shofar, and the Israeli people and even the Muslims really enjoy the shofar.
Really?
Yeah. Well,
the Muslim residents of Israel, are you talking about?
Yeah, yeah. I was able to, because I engaged the Muslims, because I know how to go past the flesh and go right into the spirit and take authority over it. And what I found one day, I went to the Dung Gate, which is right outside the Kotel, the Wailing Wall. And that has been generally a hot spot because King David's City is right outside that gate, and they're unearthing it, actually. They're taking the layers down, and there's been a lot of contention between the Muslims and the Jewish people there. So one day I went down to pray, and I saw these, you know, maybe 19, 20-year-old Arabs, and they were getting, you know, I could just in the spirit. It's a rebellious spirit. It doesn't matter if it's, you know, just a spirit. And they were kind of trying to antagonize the soldiers. So I just walked between them, and I just walked up to them. I said, hey, let me tell you something. God Almighty is angry. And they instantly humbled themselves. So I got to see by engaging darkness with the light of Christ, that always wins. And, you know, perfect love casts out fear. And if you walk in it, it actually works.
Huh. Well, yeah, you're right. I mean, perfect love does cast out fear.
Yeah, and you know, good for you for doing what you did. And that's the right way to handle.
Are you currently in Israel?
No, I just got back actually yesterday, and I spent a total of I was on the road for 18 days, and it was just me and the Holy Spirit. You know, I had a couple of people come up to me, and I was walking through one area of the Damascus Gate Muslim quarters, and there was a camera crew that was interviewing some gentleman, and I sound the shofar maybe 100 yards away, got close to him, and I was standing maybe 10, 12 feet away. I went to take the picture from the angle of the interview, and all three people looked at me, and I kind of thought it was kind of strange. Why would they look at me when I'm being quiet, you know, taking the picture 10 to 12 feet away from an angle, which they couldn't really see me. And then all of a sudden, a Muslim man, an older man, came up and shoved me, started yelling and shoved me, and started saying he was going to kill me, and just threw obscenities. And I started laughing, and then I looked, and the camera crew turned their camera on me, and then a photographer started shooting pictures of me. And then I just looked at the man. I said, hey, man, I love you, man. They didn't know what to do. So you know, it does work. And I have one scripture, because this is in 1 Samuel 2, verses 8, 9, and 10. And the gist of this scripture, I went to the Dung Hill, which is outside the Kotel, and I found what the history of the Dung Hill, the Garbage Gate, and or the Dung Gate. And I just went there, and I just repented and asked the Lord to forgive us for, you know, bringing this garbage to this gate. And that day, my scripture was this scripture. It says, he raises up the poor out of the dust and lifts up the beggar from the dunghill to set them among princes and to make them inherit the throne of the glory. For the pillars of the earth are the Lord's, and he has set the world upon them. He will keep the feet of the saints, and the wicked shall be silent in darkness. For by strength shall no man prevail. The adversaries of Yahweh shall be broken to pieces out of out of heaven shall he thunder upon them. Yahweh shall judge the ends of the earth, and he shall give strength unto his king and exalt the horn of his anointed. So that's just a quick, I just wanted to just give you a quick update on that. It was a really a blessed trip, and I just wanted to extend that blessings to you guys.
Well, thank you so much. And blessings to you too. A fantastic call. I'm glad you made your trip journey safe, and, thank you for being a voice of light out there and reason.
Yeah. Hallelujah. Thanks and thank much. You for the prayers and all the people that prayed for us. So thank you. God bless you guys.
God bless as well.
I just want to address Joe an email I got from JC. I'll just JC writes this. There seems to be anomalies in the London beheading that possibly indicate a false flag. I recommend that you check them out before commenting on air, as you, quote, assume. And then, of course, you know what that is, you know, how you break the word assume down before you assume what is reported is true. Well, JC, thank you for that. I didn't fall off the turnip truck yesterday. I understand. And I do know, if you listen to what I said it appeared that he was struck by a car. It was reported that. The video showed this, and, you know, whatever. I didn't assume anything. I am telling you, telling the listening audience, what we have seen. Have we investigated this? Of course not. But the matter, for an individual suspect or perpetrator holding a bloodied machete and a bloodied knife, and indeed shouting Allah Akbar or Allah Akbar, however you want to pronounce it, and being associated with that individual, the victim, my comment was directed toward those who immediately will dismiss any connection between their activities and Islam or Islamic terrorism. That's where I've got a problem with that. Just like I've got a problem with Nidal Hassan, that situation being classified as workplace violence and not motivated by Islamic beliefs and motivation. So, again, there's a very extreme or the very significant distinction between what I said and what you allege. Now, I take that, JC, as you intended, of course. And we want to be correct in what we report. So, you know, I don't take that in any as being a hostile email. I just want to let you know that there's certainly more to this than what they are reporting. You're indeed correct. However, let's not hide the fact that Islam, the connection between Islam and certain terrorist attacks and certain acts of terrorism. Let's not hide that fact. So,
yeah, moving right along here, we're going to go to 770. Thanks for your patience. You're going live on the Hagman and Hagman Report.
Hi, Joe and Doug. I'm calling about my impression of Obama. When he first surfaced, I was overwhelmed. It was a spiritual thing. I was overwhelmed with a sense of evilness. It was so overwhelming that I could not bear to look at his image or listen to his voice. Until this day, I still cannot look at his image, and I can't bear to listen to his voice. I believe that he is utterly evil. And I don't think that it hasn't come out yet, but I believe he's utterly evil. There's no doubt also that the Bilderberg group selected him, put him in position to be president, and they certainly did choose the perfect one for their evil agenda. That's
well,
why, you know.
Number well, I'll tell you, caller, I agree with
one
the
other
fact
thing.
That.
Pardon me,
yeah, sure.
For jumping in. I don't want to forget this either. The day it was announced that Obama was elected president the first time, I got a phone call, and someone asked what I thought of the election, and it just came out of my mouth. He may be the last president, and I believe Obama is the last president. I believe that without a doubt. And I did not vote at all this last election because I believe very strongly, America Babylon's judgment is soon. God says, flee Babylon. Do not partake in her sins. And I knew Obama would be elected again because he is the last president. I might sound crazy, and I don't care what I sound like. Uh-oh. I'm saying what I believe.
You know what, caller? You're in a club, a pretty big club, where a lot of people believe that Obama is going to be the last president. He will oversee the destruction, complete annihilation of the United States as a sovereign nation. And I happen to be among or a member of that club. I, too, believe that I know we've said this before about different elections.
He could be the last elected leader.
Right.
He could be...
Right,
not the last.
Things are changing. Caller, I believe this caller. I can relate to her. The evil nature that we're seeing from this man.
I have the same sentiment about Bush. I didn't think he was going to leave. I thought he was evil to his core.
Caller, are you still there?
I'm here. Caller? Yes.
Are you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Did you believe that about Bush? Did you get any evil inclinations or anything about Bush?
Okay. This is what happened to me actually. I was taken in by Bush his first term. I was taken in by him. By his second term, before he was elected for his second term, my eyes opened. However, this is with Obama. This is a separate thing. It is a spiritual thing because I still cannot look at his image. And there's only one other person that affected me like that, and that is Adolf Hitler. And I will tell you why. When my father came home from the Second World War, he came home with, I don't know how many hundreds of pictures of Hitler. He came home with all kinds of souvenirs. And I could not ever look at the pictures. I just felt this overwhelming evilness. And
wow.
And it happened to me when I saw Obama on television for the first time. I knew nothing about him, and it's an overwhelming sense of evilness. I will tell you one other thing. In 1993, I already told this to Joe, when you were out sick, Doug, you were out sick that night. But in April 1993, the Holy Spirit gave me a prophetic word that America is going to burn as Sodom and Gomorrah for her sins. And it was a supernatural thing. And the Lord even said why, and he said the abortions, the blatant homosexuality, and what they're teaching the little children in the schools, it's gone too far. There's no stopping it. America is Sodom and Gomorrah. Judgment is going to come down on America. And it was not until, I think around 2010, on WorldNet Daily, someone exposed Kevin Jennings, Obama's educational czar, who authorized a manual to be taught in all the public schools to little children beginning at age 5, are teaching them graphic homosexual acts. And I want to tell you, for years, I knew what I understood what the Lord meant when he said the abortions and the homosexuality. But when he said, and what they're teaching the little children in the schools made no sense to me. What could be so evil about what they're teaching the little children? And there in 2010, it came to pass. So I do believe that America's days are numbered. And believe me, I have this written down. I had told many, many people back in 1993 when this happened to me. Many, many people I've told. So I got confirmation. But anyway, repentance, repentance, and that's what I keep telling myself every single day. I got to make sure I have a pure heart, because we don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. The days are short, and God bless you both richly, because we are living in a time where you cannot speak of Jesus in most places. You can't. I was fired from jobs when I was working for talking about the Lord. I was fired. And but hearing the Hagman and Hagman radio program is like it's like being fed. It's like just the hunger is it ceases. I don't know if I'm explaining this right, but you're let out of prison, and you could just be free in the Lord. So I just pray that the Lord God protects you both and your families, and keeps you safe, and keeps you on this wonderful, wonderful mission that you are doing for the Lord's glory and saving souls. Thank you, gentlemen, and have a wonderful night.
God bless you. Thank you so very much for that call and for the very humbling remarks. My goodness.
Yeah.
And that, Joe, that caller referred to Kevin Jennings, and a lot of people don't know who Kevin Jennings is. He was, for a period of time, he was the assistant deputy secretary of with the U.S. Department of Education, but his claim to fame, honest to goodness, people, you know, his claim to fame is he wrote a number of books about homosexuality coming out, geared at the youth of America. And I can't imagine a worse person to have anywhere within the school district than Kevin Jennings. That's my personal view, ladies and gentlemen. And if you just do a search on Kevin Jennings, you'll get the scoop of who this man is. My goodness. But what a wonderful call. Thanks for letting me say that.
Absolutely wow. Fantastic call. We can fit one more call in here. We're going to go to area code 626. You're live on the Hagman and Hagman Report.
Hey, hello, Doug and Joe, and God's blessings on you both. I'm really blessed to be able to make it in here for a brief minute or two. And gentlemen, I was going to make a few points tonight regarding the economy and the shift occurring beneath our feet as sort of a warm-up for V tomorrow evening. But rather, what I'd like to do is just offer to the Hagman and Hagman family this evening some opportunities to pick up a book and educate themselves because, as many of the callers have stated tonight, we are in a quickening. Time is of the essence. Regarding some of the recent callers, the gentleman from that just got back from Israel, Mike Evans is the chairman of the Jerusalem Prayer Team. And Doug, I believe you've read one of his books, as have I. I've read three of his books. Any curiosity that the Hagman and Hagman family has about Israel, I highly recommend Mike Evans. With regard to another previous caller, there is a term I'd like to enter into the Hagman and Hagman lexicon called the Overton Window, and it's named after the former state superintendent of education for Michigan, whose name was Charles Overton. It is also the title of an excellent work of fiction by Glenn Beck, published back in 2009. And the Overton Window is the mechanism used politically, socially, even religiously, to take the consensus of the public and move it two steps forward to an ultimate agenda, and then ease it back a half step or a step. And a good example would be the airline industry. You know, first we had to take off our belts, and then we had to take off our shoes, and then we had to start walking through the Incredible Hulk naked scanners. And that's a very good example of the Overton window. If they wanted truly safe flying, they could just electronically cuff everybody to their chair in flight, but the airline industry would die immediately. So they do this in a very incremental manner, and the term that is often used is Overton window, O-V-E-R-T-O-N.
Right, caller. Unfortunately, we've reached the conclusion of our program, but I've got to tell every listener, and thank you for bringing that Overton window up. If you really want to get an education as to what is being planned, what has been planned, do some research for your homework assignment on the Overton window. Not necessarily the fictionalized version from Glenn Beck, although that can be used as an ancillary book. However, the Overton window, what it stands for, and what it represents. What a great call, my friend. What a great call. I want to thank you for really taking us out tonight on this program.
God bless you both. And I will phone back in midweek next week with an update on that police issue I described earlier this week.
Very good. We'll be looking forward to it.
All right. God bless
you. Thank you, everyone.
God bless you.
God bless you. I want to thank each and every one of you for listening tonight. We will see you tomorrow at the same time.
Or no, 9 o'clock.
9 o'clock with V and Steve Quayle. Do not want to miss that one. God bless each and every one of you. Stay safe till then.